the download. We reload this week's news with WGN Radio's Andrea Darlis and Chicago Tribune's Jeff Cohen. We look back on the year in theater with Chris Jones. And we get a Rogue One review from the movie guy's Adam Witt. And now, here's your host, a man whose peppermint bark is worse than his bite, Justin Kaufman.
Strong. That's a strong intro. And the first time I've ever heard peppermint bark used in that great old little fable. We'll take it, right? It's download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. I hope you're driving safe right now. Hopefully inside somewhere warm as the snow rumbles through the Chicago area once again. Although it seems like here on Michigan Avenue, it seems to be slowing down a little bit, which is nice. About maybe a half hour, hour ago. Woo! I was feeling it. Hitting the old face. Heading over to the Walgreens across the way. And I was like, oh, that's it for me. I'm done. I'm not going outside for the rest of the weekend. All right, we got a great show lined up for you tonight. Sam Panionovich is here. We're going to talk a little sports. I got some questions about the Chicago Bulls today. Nikola Mirotic, did he not show up? We'll talk to him. He didn't show up to the shoot around, therefore getting himself fined after a night in which the Bulls got blown out up in Milwaukee, where he didn't play at all. I got a DNP. So something's going on there, which I think is okay. I'll be honest with you. Three cola? Is that what they say? Three cola? He ain't doing so hot, man. He got to get it together. There's something about, you know, like there was a lot. There was a sort of like, if you remember when he came to town, it was like, ooh, this is going to be good. We got a guy. This could be it. And he hasn't turned into much. So we'll see what's happening there. If he's sort of falling out of favor with Coach Hoiberg and if he's just sort of not taking it the right way. We'll talk about that with Sam. Also tonight, we'll reload this week's news. Andrea Darlis, Jeff Cohen from the Tribune as well. Find out what's the big story, what's the most important story, overreported, underreported, winners, losers. What story will be remembered in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now? Do all that. Chris Jones is going to stop by as well. Give us sort of a wrap-up in theater. It's a big year in theater. Big year in theater drama, like offstage drama. You had the big story the Reader did on the Profiles Theater. You had the big story about Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind and the end up in Andersonville and Greg Allen. Second City, some of the cast members leaving. So we'll talk about sort of the ups and downs of Chicago theater this year with Chris Jones. It's coming up a little bit later. And we'll have a Rogue One review. I've decided I'm going to see Rogue One in the next 2 weeks that I have off. You know, before we come back in January, I'm going to see it like 25 times. And I'm not a Star Wars guy. I just want to feel what it's like to see something so many times. Right? See how that works. News, weather, and traffic with my man Rob Martier. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back to the carryout. Stay with us. Got a great show tonight, so let's kick it off with the carryout. This is, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you know what? You don't have to. Here are today's top stories. President Obama held his year-end press conference today, his last one. What a concept, a politician that answers questions at press conferences, and one that wears his tie at the right length. The president promised to retaliate against the Russian hacks. Come on, Obama, no need to name call. He also talked about the improving economy and spoke about what America needs to do, punctuated by several long sighs. And not once did Obama tell us how great he is, which is so weird. I mean, is he great if he doesn't say it or make hats? Obama's like the cool uncle who plays hoops and brings us big novelty pencils from his trip to New York City. Trump, he's more like the drunk, angry uncle who makes up nasty nicknames for all the kids. Hey, Snotty! Look at Snotty! Sorry, I had a runny nose. One time. Shouldn't stick with me this long. On the other hand, President-elect Trump is busy on his thank you tour, which is confusing because I think Trump wants you to thank him. I'm not sure. Actually, last night he told a crowd in Pennsylvania that he wanted to thank quote-unquote smart African-Americans for not voting for Hillary. Wait, is this meant to be offensive? I'm confused. Is this Trump's way of, like, pushing boundaries like my 9-year-old does after watching Saturday Night Live? Hey, Dad, in a box.
Yeah, I get it. All right, I get it. You can't say that. All right. If the cabinet confirmations stand, Donald Trump's big four cabinet members, Justice, Secretary of State, Defense, and Fed, will all be white males for the first time since 1993, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the outspoken campaign promise for Trump, right? So it's not surprising. But for all the younger people in our audience, cabinet members used to hide their loyalties to big banks and the oil industry. It was called checks and balances, which used to be something you didn't need an ATM card for, right? Let's talk about state politics. The GOP in North Carolina. Wow. Here's the quick summary. The Republican governor lost. On his way out, the Republican state house voted to take away a bunch of power from the new Democratic governor. Appointments, redistricting, political power, legislatively taken away. It's essentially the political equivalent of filling the toilet with cement when you get foreclosed. So the outgoing governor signed into law a bill that takes all the power from the new governor. The biggest question that comes to my mind, how is this the first time this has ever happened, right? Ingenious. I'm surprised we don't see this every 4 years. A new study's out that says 1 in 10 airline pilots suffer from untreated depression, which is also called life. But okay. I can understand the stat because airline pilots, they got a lot of ups and downs. You know, I'm going to write that down. That's good. Lot of ups and downs. Send that one to Leno. I think I still got his fax number. In weather, maybe you could help me out here. What's the difference between Hollywood and Hollywood Hills? Or should I just look outside of LA and look at Pasadena, Eagle Rock, maybe Santa Barbara? Limited options, I know, but still better than here. My Lord. And it's gonna get colder? Winter weather includes more snow, more cold, grounded flights, stalled metro trains, and that frozen gray look on all area roads. And it's the middle of December. What's going on? What did we do? Is this all because the Bears suck? In sports, the Bears. Yes, they will be punished for such a miserable season with miserable weather on Sunday. It probably won't break the NFL's coldest game record because, well, this team doesn't really deserve to break any records. Alshon Jeffrey is back, but the Packers are huge favorites on the road. Marquise Wilson broke his foot again for the third year in a row. Hey, at least he's consistent, right? Looking for consistency? You got it. Also, Pernell McPhee was quoted as saying that wearing sleeves during the game is a sign of weakness. Yeah, it is. It's a human weakness. We don't have fur. This is why we're going to go extinct. You know who else has a weakness? Slow zebras. It's evolution. Look it up. I don't want to take, like, evolution cues from linebackers. Aroldis Chapman told reporters today that Cubs manager Joe Maddon overused him in the playoffs this year. Of course, if you care to remember, Maddon brought Chapman in the seventh inning during the World Series, and he pitched during a meaningless ninth inning. And then Chapman served up a homer in Game 7 to blow the save. But the missing part of this story? The Cubs won the World Series. So who cares? This is a fun kicker story. Or go with the water skiing squirrel. It doesn't matter. Move on. Nothing to see here. Are the White Sox done dealing? Sources say that the Sox are trying to move starting pitcher Jose Quintana to the Astros for a slew of talented prospects. The Astros believe that the asking price is too high, but then again, they're not that great at money since, you know, they used to play at Enron Field. And another big win for the Blackhawks last night in New York against the Islanders. They're so good this year, 20-8. Taves is back, Corey Crawford skating again, but Scott Darling, he's going to be in goal this weekend for a showdown at the UC against the Blues. If you guys don't mind, hockey baby. Pretty good, huh? And finally tonight, Rogue One, the new Star Wars movies in theaters. I can tell because all my Facebook friends are taking photos of their tickets, which is a terrible way to use social media. Also, I'm so bummed. I put my brown cape into the dry cleaner. I don't think it's going to be ready by the weekend. I only have one brown cape. What am I going to do? This movie's not a prequel nor a sequel. It's a new genre they're calling Money Grab. Yep. Basically, it's a two-hour movie adapted from the very first two on-screen sentences of Star Wars. So what's it mean? It means Star Wars is going to ruin Christmases for hundreds of years to come. That's the carryout for December 16, 2016. Hey, we got a big special on eggnog. But you know what? We ran out of eggs, so it's just nog. All right, coming up, Sam Panionovich is going to tell us what's the haps with the Bulls. What's wrong with the Bulls, a team that I predicted to be at least 60 wins.
I may have to roll that back. But like I said, basketball doesn't start till Christmas. It's Christmas. All right, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I am doing well, and you?
I'm good. Ready to rock. Big night. Absolutely. Sam Panionovich is in here complaining about all of Chicago sports.
Well, really that's a job. Is. That's a job.
It's been a pleasure for the last 10 minutes. So, are the Bulls any good? No. Yeah. Are the Blackhawks? No.
We didn't go to the Blackhawks.
No, Blackhawks are probably.
You didn't bring them up because you knew I knew that they're good.
Right.
Well, speaking of sports, it is quite amazing that after, what, 108 years? Is that the amount of time between World Series championships that people are still second-guessing this thing? Come on, folks.
Right.
Let's just soak it in.
Well, Chapman threw Joe Maddon under the bus today.
That was weird that he did that.
My arm was tired.
You know what?
Yeah.
And he got his money, too.
Yeah. What a ring.
We'll talk about it.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball. They're playing basketball.
Not very well. It's the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin, Sam Panionovich in studio to talk a little bit about the Chicago Bulls. We're on back-to-back games with the Milwaukee Bucks. Last night, blown out in Milwaukee. A game that today even caused some drama in the clubhouse as Nikola Mirotic, who did not play at all last night, which was very surprising for a guy who is one of the big players for the Chicago Bulls, skipped the shoot-around. He said he forgot.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird answer. Sam, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you. By the way, that's the first time I've actually known a song that you've bumped back with in the year and a half, almost 2 years you've been here.
That's a Space Jam's jam, isn't it?
That's Little Bow Wow.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, thanks, Pete. Yeah, Little Bow Wow. You know, I had his first CD. So
there you go.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the Chicago Bulls right now. You and I, at the beginning of the year, kind of said, well, this is a team that doesn't seem to look to play for anything this year. They've been better, they've been worse, they're kind of mediocre, and the record indicates that after so far this season. I'm interested because they will show flashes. I mean, they beat the Spurs, they beat the Cavaliers. They show flashes, but they just don't really get up for these middle games.
That's the league, though. I mean, you look at the Spurs, they were 18-4, they were 13-0 at home. You go on the road, you lose. It happens. I'm not so much concerned about the Bulls beating the Cavs, beating the Spurs. I mean, that's going to happen. It's when you lose to the Lakers, and you lose to the Knicks, and you lose to these teams that have no business coming into your barn and winning. I mean, they don't protect home court. They don't really win on the road. They're 13-12 right now, which, for all intents and purposes, is an average basketball team. And right now they're losing 42-22 at home against a team they played yesterday. You would think they'd be able to fine-tune a game plan to stop what Milwaukee does well. Milwaukee comes in and they score 34 points in the first quarter. So
is it a distraction that you start to see a little friction where Mirotic misses a shoot-around? Do we start to see some of the things we saw last year with the Bulls where people started to go against the coach and Butler had that little tirade?
I'll tell you, I'm waiting for the first Jimmy Butler meltdown. I thought it'd be about December 15th. Kid you not, it happened after 20, 25 games last year. We're at December 16 right now, so it might happen tonight. And last game, the last home game that I was at, he turned down a couple of questions and somebody asked him after the game. They played Minnesota and lost to the T-Wolves. T-Wolves had six wins coming in. They were the second worst team in the league and they beat the Bulls. And somebody asked Jimmy about the emotions facing former head coach Tom Thibodeau. Jimmy paused for about 5 seconds and said, "Next question, please." So it's coming. That volcano is going to erupt pretty soon. Now, is it tonight? I don't know. Is it the next game? Who knows? But he's going to have another meltdown. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, so this team, what can it do to get on a streak? Because it's a very streaky team. You have three straight wins, three straight losses. What can it do? I mean, because we were just talking, it's not a particularly young team. It has a lot of rookie or younger players, but it's not a team that you're going to expect to get better as the season goes on because of players like Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler. Is what we're seeing right now what we're going to get from this Bulls team?
The starters are old, but the bench is young. So you've got a lot of older players playing a lot of minutes early in the season. Dwayne Wade has been healthy so far, knock on wood. You know, Rajon Rondo's been out a couple of times with a couple of different things. Butler's been healthy, and then Gibson and Lopez are your starters. But then when you go to the bench, even when that front unit does have a lead, the bench just lets other teams crawl back in. And, you know, it's guys like McDermott and Portis, who has been terrible since he's been here. They're trying to figure out this Jaren Grant, and they got Felicio off the bench. So it's kind of like an accordion. You know, you've got the older guys, and then when you crunch it down in the middle, you got the younger guys. So it's an interesting mix. And, of course, you know, Fred Hoiberg was brought here because the team was going to shoot threes and make threes and get a lot of looks. They're last in the league in threes. So, I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, let me just say this. On Tuesday when they lost to Minnesota, I believe it was Tuesday night, I would have paid anything to be in that room with Gar Forman and John Paxson watching that game unfold.
It
the Bulls
ridiculous.
Were up by 21.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And their former head coach, who they jettisoned out to bring in this pace and space, shoot the three coach, and he loses to the old coach.
After having a 21-point lead.
Largest comeback in the NBA this year, by the way.
Yeah. Well, let's stay on basketball. Let's go to the college ranks. I mean, we start to see, I mean, it's finals week for colleges, so they're going to stop. But the local teams, we do NU basketball here in Northwestern. They've had a great start. They got a big game tomorrow night against Dayton, which will go a long way to whether or not they're tournament ready.
Right. Northwestern 8-2. Played 10. They've won 8. I mean, that's all you can ask for in the non-conference. But I think the difference from this year and last season, and you know I call it like it is with Northwestern because I'm an Illini guy. I mean, Northwestern this year stepped up in the non-conference. They played at Butler, lost by 2. They played against Texas, won by 19. They played against Notre Dame, lost by 4. They've beaten Wake Forest. They've beaten DePaul. They're going to play Dayton tomorrow, a tournament team. This isn't Mississippi Valley State. This isn't, you know, Illinois Tech. This isn't Chicago State. They're playing and beating good teams. And Northwestern, they're probably going to finish better than Illinois this year. I think Northwestern and Illinois are both going to be in that range of 5th to 7th in the Big Ten. Now, are they 5th or are they 7th? That remains to be seen. But Northwestern, they're out there. They're shooting well. They're playing defense. And they're getting up and down the floor. And I think Chris Collins is the sole contributor for that. He has been awesome as a head coach.
Let me ask you as we wrap on the Illini.
Yeah.
I mean, the Illini early on, they had a couple losses in non-conference kind of losses where there was talk like, all right, you got to ship this coach. This
John
is,
Gross.
It's rebuild time. I mean, are we past that? Is the team rebounded? You're saying that they might have a shot here to make some waves in the Big Ten.
They should make the tournament. I'd be shocked if they didn't. They've lost to West Virginia. They're in the top 25. They've lost to Florida State in the top 25. And a home loss against Winthrop, who's probably going to be they're going to be a tournament team.
I know. That's the one everyone said, get this coach out of here.
No, but Winthrop is a very solid team. You know, they're in a smaller conference. They're in the Big South, but people don't know Winthrop. They don't correlate Winthrop with Duke and Kentucky and UCLA.
You think they can compete with the Big Ten?
I think Illinois should be, like I said, in that 5-7 range. They've got good guards, starting with Malcolm Hill out of Belleville, Tracy Abrams in his 6th year. He went to Mount Carmel on the south side. You've got some good wings, some good guards, and you've got some size inside. So they should be all right. I do think the Big Ten is still the best conference, and they might get 7 or 8 teams.
Okay, you know a lot about college basketball, some of the mid-majors in town, Loyola, DePaul,
Loyola's
UIC.
Awesome. UIC, we lost our best player to a torn ACL the other day.
So do any of these teams should be watching these teams for possible sort of Cinderella teams for the tournament?
If Loyola gets in, they can make a Sweet 16. They're really good.
Do you think they can win their conference and get in?
Yeah, I think they can. You know, it's going to be Loyola against Wichita State. Those are the two best teams in the Missouri Valley. So I would keep my eyes peeled on Loyola. They actually play tomorrow at UIC. UIC just beat DePaul, so there's a lot of inner-city ball going on right now.
Right.
So stay tuned.
Sam Panionovich, WGN Sports, thanks for joining us, bud. Happy holidays.
You too, man.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Unless, of course, it's improperly ventilated. They never get to that part of the song, do they? Tonight, we're going to talk about some hazards in the house as some of this inclement weather comes in, whether it be the snow that's coming tonight or the cold, cold weather.
We wanted to get an idea of what are some of the things that are happening in our house and what we should be aware of. Joining us on the line right now is Jose Fernandez. He is an Allstate agency owner. He actually has two locations, one in Irving Park and one in the West Loop. He's owned them for over 2 years. Jose, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Justin, a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
All right, so let's talk about this Holiday Home Hazard Survey, which is really it shares statistics about hazards around the home this time of year. What can you tell us about the survey?
Yeah, Justin, Allstate does a fantastic survey each year. Actually, for the last 3 years, we have been doing it. Allstate displays what are the hazards for this type of holidays, and it shows an in-depth analysis on what homeowners should do and why shouldn't they do during this time of the year.
What are some of the common hazards that are taking place? What are some of the things that you guys identified?
The first thing, amazingly, that it identified is that new homeowners are more prepared to deal with their house than a particular old homeowner. Basically, they take care of their homes particularly more in depth and follow the instructions correctly. Mm-hmm. Let me give you some statistics. 90% of the first homeowners expect to have company in their house, and they take care maybe better, they prepare better for people that are foreign to their houses. So they take care of fire issues, they take care of monoxide, carbon alarms. They kind of are very careful about the piping that doesn't freeze and things of that nature.
So if you're in a situation where you've owned your house for a while and you're antisocial, not a good combination.
It's not a good sign.
What else you got on the survey?
Actually, also that everybody that actually doesn't take care of the home is going to suffer some kind of issues in their house. It's either fire because they do not connect. It's as simple as connecting a light into the wrong outlet, and then that connection is not the correct one for the lights of the tree. And new homeowners are very careful on that. Obviously, also the pipes, and we have to make sure that there is no water resident on the pipe so it doesn't freeze. They don't put the temperature at the correct temperature. The temperature should be at about 65 Fahrenheit. And unfortunately, they set it up very low. So it's minor things that you need to take care of to correct issues that are possible hazards to your house.
Well, you know, what does it mean? I mean, this whole the Holiday Home Hazard Survey is nationwide, but what does it mean for Illinois in particular? I mean, are those the big issues when it comes to cold and snow because of the area we live in?
Sure. Actually, the main issue in Illinois is obviously freezing. There are so many claims of burst pipes because of water that have remained on the pipes and people do not take care of it. Also, there is a little bit of freezing, freezing from the roof, freezing for anywhere in the houses. The other thing that usually happens is homeowners do not take care of their chimneys correctly. They don't clean up the vents, the exhaust of the chimneys, and then unfortunately that creates a big fire hazard for the homeowners.
Yeah. All right, so what are some of the tips? I mean, I've known just anecdotally, I mean, you know, the idea, do you run water? What are some of the tips when you talk about freezing pipes, chimneys, and other fire hazards?
The first thing is, obviously, install new batteries on the smoke alarm and the carbon monoxide detectors. That is top-notch, first on the list in relationship to avoid any issues. Then inspect the inside and the outside of the house for any leaks that may be on the piping. Also, based on Illinois, you should keep your house at 65 degrees. That prevents for any freezing in the house. Then do not overload the power strips. As I told you, we like to decorate a lot during this time.
Right,
and unfortunately, we overload the power strips.
All right, good information. Jose Fernandez is an Allstate agency owner. He's been doing it for 2 years. He owns two different locations, one in Irving Park and also one in the West Loop. Jose, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Justin, thank you so much for having us, and happy holidays for everybody.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time to reload this week's news. What was the biggest story? Overreported, underreported, winners, losers. Which story sucked you down the rabbit hole? And what story will we remember in 5 years, 10 years, 50, 500 years from now, from this week?
312-981-7200 is the number. And my guests in studio, I'm very happy. I don't know how you are here. Andrea Darlis.
I'm happy to be here.
The co-host and news anchor for the Cochrane Show in the morning. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, do you sleep?
I did. I went home and I crashed for about an hour. Well, we had our Christmas carol today, our performance, and then we had the holiday party. So I had to go home after I had a mimosa at lunch. It was, you know, the holidays,
and that did
Justin.
It, right?
Yeah,
that's,
you did
that's
great,
like sleep.
By the way.
Thank you.
I took
too.
A nap for an hour, and then I went over with a good friend of mine to the Caroling of the Bean, and it was a blizzard, and then we started walking back here, and it all stopped. So no, it's been a great day. I'm
well,
glad
it's
to be here.
It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Well,
the
thanks for
we
having
always
me.
Always love having you. Jeff Cohen's here as well. He is a Chicago Tribune reporter. Good to see you, buddy.
Hello, sir.
And a author, and you just came from a book signing at the GOAT for your book that came to paperback, the Blago book, which was. I mean, when did you put that out? About 5 years ago now. 3 years
no,
ago.
That one is maybe 2.5, 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of out of paperback a little bit late, but yeah, we went down to the GOAT and. I promise I'm in fine condition anyway.
Yeah, me too.
All right, well, let's get to it. I'm excited to have both of you here, to reload this week's news. Why don't we start right at the top, Jeff? Why don't we start with you? What do you have as the biggest story of the week?
Well, I thought that this was sort of a twofer. I think the biggest domestic story to me was the Russian hacking situation that's continued to kind of reverberate through the fallout from the election. The president gave a speech today, talked about it in depth. I know you have that as maybe one that you think was a little bit overreported, but I think that's one that's going to have some legs here going forward. I think it's when there's fairly clear evidence, even though it hasn't been fully disclosed, of a foreign government, meddling in one of our elections. It's a pretty big deal.
It really is, and it's a big deal, and it also, and I think that the pushback has been very interesting. The president-elect coming out and just saying, that could be anybody, they don't know. And right. And really sort of like, and almost out of character in a way, because, if he has any rivals or anyone and he doesn't, any
right.
situation, he'll go after him. And this, he's more friendly. He's friendly with the Russians.
He's backed off a little bit. And the thing about it, to me, and I've noticed even on some social media too, is people keep pointing out that he actually, at one point during the campaign, asked Russia to hack Hillary's email. So, apparently he got his wish, but... I think everybody is sort of hamstrung in the way that they can react to it a little bit. I thought the president was today because he can't come out and fully disclose what happened because there are intelligence forces moving, against what happened. And he didn't want to. He said that at one point, we can't. There are things we know about that we don't want them to know that we know. So he can't come out and fully confirm everything that they are even aware of because it would ruin things that they're trying
Andrea,
to do.
Andrea, it's a surreal story in the way that, the big question I have, and it keeps ringing up, and I see this brought up a lot in sort of pro-Trump supporters, is this happens all the time. The U.S. is involved in other people's election. This is not a big thing. This happens. We just never are told about it.
I've heard that over and over again, and I agree with you both. I think Donald Trump is the story of the week, the Trump extravaganza, everything from Rex Tillerson to who he's appointing to his cabinet. Everything he does is polarizing and continues to be polarizing. And the news of the Russian hacking goes hand in hand with the story of the week. It won't end. Now it's getting worse. And I mean, if you put politics aside, put Democrats, Republicans, whatever, independent, put everything aside, bottom line is we're all American citizens. We're Americans. Everybody should be outraged at the thought of Russia hacking into our election. It's Russia and the United States. So again, put your politics aside. How is this not more, how's there not more outrage?
Even with
Trump supporters, I mean, stand back and as an American say, hey, this is crazy that they hacked in. And how often is it that the CIA and the FBI agree?
I know,
we had
that's
the whole
other
story
one too. They
last
came out,
year,
right,
with the lack of information sharing. Now they're on the same page.
Everybody's on the same page.
Everybody's on the same page.
But I guess, that argument, and I've been trying to be very objective. I've been trying to think that maybe there is something to the way that the media sort of generates stories and delivers it to me. And I'm like everybody else, sometimes just consuming off headlines, instead of really reading in. Is this something that the United States and countries like Russia and Japan and China and others, they get involved in ways that in other countries' election, and it's just the standard sort of operating procedure that we just didn't know about? That's the question I have, if that's worth leaning
this
on.
This, to me, was different. I'm sure that there are all sorts of American efforts in foreign elections that we're not aware of when there's a choice between a regime that maybe is unfriendly to us and – and an opponent who maybe is. I think this is different because it's such a high level, and it was probably one of the most, well, definitely one of the most, but maybe the most contentious election in recent American history. And the country's still dealing with that and dealing with, you know, the fact that the recounts aren't going to happen, but Hillary won the popular vote. And so Trump's kind of coming at this entire thing, I think, from a position of weakness, where he wants to try to be as on, you know, strong a footing as he can get on, given all the circumstances. And it doesn't help him to have this sort of uncertainty interjected in there.
Plus, it's such a backdoor way to do it. I mean, you're right, Jeff. The United States will say, you know, we're against Bashar Assad's regime. We're against Saddam Hussein. We'll pick a country and openly say, you know what, we're going to help in efforts to take down this leader because he's a dictator, whatever the reason might
be. We're at least open about it.
With Aleppo, whatever it might be. But to literally have another government, another faction meddle in personal email. I mean, think how you'd feel if somebody messed with your email or your personal information, credit card fraud, things of that sort. And now we have another government, Russia, of all governments, hacking into our people. You know, Hillary's an American. Donald Trump's an American. Hacking into our people's emails and whatnot.
Well, and I think Obama said, too, today that it kind of got away from everybody. I mean, while they were trying to figure out how to deal with it, although in the summer they did come out and state that they believed that Russia was involved in this. But from there, steps that you might take to call more attention to it, you look like you're meddling in the election. So they were hamstrung.
Let me do this. Let's go to Tony, because Tony's got a good thought that I thought about as well, about how personal this is. Meaning, you know, how much of the players, these power players, Putin, Trump, Clinton, all involved. Tony, welcome to the download. What's your thought?
Well, I was just commenting to the guy that answered. You know, rumor has it that when Putin wanted to get reelected after Medvedev, Hillary went over there and was spreading all kinds of negative propaganda when she was Secretary of State because she didn't want him reelected.
Yeah.
You know, so this might just be a little payback for that.
That's not so much
to do with Trump.
That's a good point.
And, you know, and let's not forget what Hillary did to Bernie Sanders. I mean, she basically, you know, subterfuged his whole campaign. Had she not meddled with him, he might very well have won the Democratic nomination.
So I guess the thing,
you know, what goes around comes around.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think so.
There's a part of that.
There's a part. The problem I have with the concept that somehow Hillary Clinton as the Secretary of State was at fault, meaning as fault, you know, meddling as we've just talked about. I mean, that's what everybody's doing, and that is part of the job of being, you know, in the American government.
True.
And the idea that the payback would be to hack and go into our actual election to someone because of a past relationship, it still doesn't make it okay. That's, I think, the point. She didn't have it coming. Yeah, what goes around comes around does not work in this scenario.
Yeah, I don't think it excuses it either. I'm also just interested in the way that, in this election, especially, even more so than just the last one, you had the mechanism for the delivery of this. I mean, the fact that the Russians could, you know, subvert normal channels and just get it to WikiLeaks and know that it was going to be out. I mean, they didn't even have to perform that level of subterfuge. They just had to kind of get it to WikiLeaks.
Right. And what piles on, too, is that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million. This isn't 3,000, 300,000. This wasn't Gore v. Bush. This was 3 million votes.
And in states that matter, there were some pretty tight margins, sure.
And you know, I saw this tweet, and I thought about it, too. I'm like, imagine if the tables were turned in this situation. Imagine if it came out that the Russians hacked Donald Trump, and Donald Trump won by 3 million, but Hillary Clinton was the president-elect. How Donald Trump would be acting in this situation.
Honestly, I'm going to go out on a limb. I would say there would be more outrage if Hillary was president. Because I just think
just the way it was. Yeah. Andrea Darlis, Jeff Cohen in studio. We're breaking down this week's news. 312-981-7200. Your texts and phone calls here on the download. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Andrea Darlis, Jeff Cohen in studio. We're breaking down this week's news. 312-981-7200. There's a lot of people on the line that want to talk about the Russian hack. We'll get back to it, but let's keep going. Let's do some overreported and underreported. Jeff, what do you got for overreported story of the week?
Well, I had a few, but I think we want to talk about fake news. Fake news, and the thing about fake news is that you can define it almost any way you want to define it. You can talk about Facebook.
Yeah.
People on the left will talk about Fox News as fake news, and people watch Fox News will talk about CNN as fake news. And so I think it's become a term that's kind of been injected into the American conversation. And it just seems like nobody knows what it is. Nobody knows what it means. Nobody knows what it really costs anybody else in the election.
I will say this. I find it interesting because we've had a lot of media conversations on the show about the future of journalism. And how Facebook is really positioning itself as a platform that's where all news is going to be consumed. You're not going to have websites for news sites, and it's all going to be fed through and funneled. This is not a good development for Facebook that they have a credibility issue early on in their process.
Right. You don't get news doesn't come from Twitter. And you know, the irony, I think, of all of this, Jeff and Justin, is that WikiLeaks really took Hillary Clinton down. WikiLeaks, to me, is just, it makes my skin crawl. It's not a credible news source. It's not journalists. It's yellow journalism at its best. And for that to have, you know, if anything's fake news, WikiLeaks, everything that comes out of WikiLeaks is fake news and illegal.
The media got caught up in that one because everybody else is reporting it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, thinking today about the Russian hack situation, you know, preparing to come here, I was trying to think of how many times I read a WikiLeaks story that had the Russian hack context in it, that, oh, this could possibly have been provided by Russian agents. Yep. And that kind of changes the conversation a little bit.
Well,
fake news, I mean, it's hard to even talk about because it's hard to quantify.
You know, the story that we didn't even – I guess this would be the one that I guess is maybe losers journalism. We'll get to it. Did you see the story about the Santa Claus that went to the hospital and then he cried
and the kid died in his arms? Yeah.
They're now pulling that story back, saying that it didn't happen because they can't substantiate. And that's journalism. That's not. And I heard people say there's fake news. I'm like, that's not fake news. That's a fake source. That's somebody who tricked a columnist into writing a story and they can't substantiate that story.
Yeah, I mean, the opposite way of thinking about this to plug, you know, good old newspapers, is that is the purpose of newspapers and other legitimate news sites, is to screen out quote-unquote fake news. That's what we do, is pursue actual facts, put them in context, and explain them for people. And people come to hopefully trust an outlet like the Chicago Tribune. Mm-hmm. And they go to the front page and they don't expect to have to decide whether the story is fake or not.
Right.
You know, that's hopefully, you know, knock on wood somewhere, but I think that's the idea of real journalism that, you know, people have to pay for, and we're all still figuring that out.
Yeah.
You know, that's something to think about.
Andre, what do you got for
overreported? Well, on a lighter note, flip or flop. Everywhere I went, Facebook, Twitter, you know, World News Tonight, everything was flip or flop. I actually never even watched it. I do watch some reality TV. That I never watched.
I've never watched it either. This is the couple that they break up or something.
Oh, yeah.
I skimmed
cover,
all over.
Literally every magazine with, you know, with the exception of Time, Newsweek, and the major news.
Barely.
Yeah.
Right, but you're right.
But I'm thinking flip or flop. Enough with this.
Yeah, the couple that was in it, they got broke up, and then everybody's going crazy.
And now, the police were called to the house, and he was chasing her with a gun, and then it just becomes this big pile of sensational TMZ.
And I think that's where you get a little bit of the Kanye West going to visit Donald Trump too, and the overreported, where you're like, really? I mean, you kind of get a vibe from Kanye West a little bit that you're like, you want to go where the story's at. And the story has to be about you in some form, because this seems really ill-timed for him to be meeting with the president-elect after the week he had the mental breakdown, the whole thing.
Well, and supposedly the topic was Chicago violence, and I think a lot of people who pay attention to the, you know, the hip-hop and rap community here would wonder what exactly Kanye has done. You know, he's not.
Yeah, quite honestly, I mean, I work at the TV station on the weekends covering mainly crime and shootings and you know, breaking news. I know a lot of people have an issue with that term, but breaking news. I've never seen Kanye in Englewood, at a church in South Austin, East Garfield Park. I personally, maybe he's been there, but we've never reported on that.
I think that probably is a smokescreen in some form, and it probably came up in topics, but it wasn't the reason that Kanye West went to talk to Donald Trump. I don't know. I don't want to go out on a limb, guys.
That whole, you know, I'm Kardashian publicity machine, you got to wonder about all kinds of things whenever they appear.
Right. I love that they went, you know what, we got to get Kanye back in. We know it's going to help his mental state. Let's have a meet with Donald Trump.
Although someone was funny. Someone said, you know, Trump's having a hard time finding performers and entertainers for the inauguration.
There you go.
And then maybe that's what they were talking about.
All right. You know, I want to do underreported as well. And there's some really good stuff, but we're running close on time to get to the newscast. So why don't I take a couple of these calls quick about the hacking so we get that out. Let's go to Paul. Paul, what do you want to say about the Russian hack stuff?
said that WikiLeaks is fake news. Someone,
Andre just said
that.
Yeah,
I don't like WikiLeaks. It's not a credible news source.
It's not news, it's source material.
Right, who's confirming these stories?
All right, so you're mad that supposedly Russia hacked the DNC.
They hacked both.
And then they gave WikiLeaks fake news?
Look at your first sentence. So aren't you mad? You're an American citizen. Aren't you a little bit upset that Russia's hacking into American, United States of American email?
I'm overjoyed. I'm overjoyed that they actually basically said this is how evil and dirty and criminal the DNC was.
They had a lot of junk on the RNC, too.
The thing about it, is you have to imagine a day somewhere in the future where the same thing happens against a position that you might care about.
Exactly. Let's go to Emmanuel. Emmanuel, what do you got? What do you want to say about the hack?
Yes, well, basically, all I'm saying is to stop the hacking and not talk about it. Let's just change the whole political system. Let's enact a legislation or a referendum, national referendum, whereby whoever wins the majority of the votes becomes the president. Mm-hmm. That will end all this conversation, all these collateral talks about hacking, no hacking. We can talk about that till the cows come home. It ain't going to change anything. Just change the system, period. Yeah. We've been talking about it for decades, and no one does nothing about it. Let's be talking about hacking this, hacking that, hacking. You will go on. Hacking will continue to go on. It's not going to stop. In fact, it's going to get worse the more technology develops. So let's change the system. The bottom line is we're not happy the way the system is. Let's go out there and pass a referendum or a new law or something saying whoever wins the most votes wins the election. That's how it's done the most
often. There you go. Thanks, Emmanuel. Appreciate that. Okay, well, 312-981-7200. Andre Darlis, Jeff Cohen. We'll take a break. We'll get tonight's news from Rob Martier, and we'll come back. 720 WGN. Thank you, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number if you want to get a text in or call to reload this week's news with Andre Darlis and Jeff Cohen in studio. All right, so we have gotten through overreported and biggest stories. That's where we're at. Let's do underreported. I'm interested because these are always my favorite categories. What do you got for underreported?
Well, for me, even though it's been a major story and I think everybody is covering it and talking about it, I still think the fall of Aleppo is probably not getting the full level of attention that it would normally be getting. Maybe it's still with the election fallout and other things going on. But some real horror stories, coming out of there, and a lot of really remarkable social media, speaking of social media feeds and people telling stories about the evacuation there. And I think it continues to be, probably one of the central foreign policy situations going forward. Man. And, when you talk about some of the old news veterans will tell the young reporters, well, it's all one story. Here we go again with it kind of being all one story where it's a situation now where Russia's calling the shots too. Even on Russia's reporting to half the world about the level of, evacuation going on that humanitarian groups are disagreeing with. So it's just there's all kinds of
it is. You're right. It's a very complex story of not just about political powers and who's on what side and what we've seen with not even the human rights violations that are happening are just horrendous. But it also has to do with a media story where, who's in charge of the story that's being told? And you'll have, leak out different sort of angles coming from social media than what the state or – and then, like you said, the humanitarian agencies being like, that's not what's happening at all. I mean, I can see why it's underreported because it's a difficult story to sort of consume as a news consumer.
Yeah, you have people now, just now saying, wow, this is happening. Aleppo has fallen. I mean, Aleppo is, that's it. We had the last people leaving the city today. This has been going on. And in kind of a strange way, I almost think Gary Johnson put Aleppo back on the map with the whole, what is Aleppo? And you had people, of course, he should know what Aleppo is. You're running for president. But there were some people at that point who still didn't know
what it was.
And that kind of put it on the map. And we watched some of these images. But you're right. I do agree. It's very underreported. It was always like the last story of the newscast or the last story of the national block. Now we're seeing the images of the children. And last night, all the children up there, like I think they had 15 orphans who were up there, and the little girl was saying, you know, please adopt us. You know, so now they're getting the hashtags and they're getting the publicity that they should be getting, but it's almost too little too late.
You know, I'm a prime example of not knowing the story as well as I should. I know what's happening there, but do I? I mean, I'm not paying that close attention. I could probably do more. There's a lot going on domestically that we have to cover as well. But I feel like, you know, what can we expect from this story in 2017? Because Donald Trump's going to come in. Does he change a sort of policy on the war in Syria? Does he change the way that the U.S. has been involved?
I think that's an interesting question. And just this week, he started talking about, he was using the term safe zones, that he would like to see safe zones created in Syria in some way, shape, or form. Not a lot of detail on what that would entail. What does that mean? Obama was asked today at his press conference about the situation there, and he kind of gave the same type of answer he's been giving. I mean, the U.S. is a little bit kind of out of place right now in terms of what we can really influence there, which is why, again, I say I think Russia's really kind of calling the shots. But he basically said that they'd looked at it and looked at it and looked at it, the president, and said that short of putting a major amount of American boots on the ground, you're not really going to influence that situation. And so it's one of those things that's kind of gotten away from everybody.
And in the case of Donald Trump, and you think about this is where it all kind of ties together with this Russian hack and the Secretary of State having relations, or the Secretary of State nominee having relations with Russia, that what if we do set up something that's safe zone and Russia violates it? Do we see a U.S.-Russia how do we see that relationship playing out when you're talking about different interests, you know, not the least of which is humanitarian in this situation. One of the reasons we're in this pickle when it comes to actual the destruction in Syria is because Russia wants it done, and they don't put a premium when it comes to humanitarian issues.
No, they don't. And you have several countries fighting proxy wars there, and you've got Iran is using its influence there. You've got ISIS in play in major parts of the country. You've got sort of everything going on in the Middle East kind of bubbling together in one spot.
Yeah, look what happened in Ukraine, too. I don't think, and this is just an opinion, I don't think Aleppo is really on Donald Trump's, I don't think it's at the forefront of his agenda. I think he knows it's a problem. I'm sure his advisors keep an eye on the situation. But I just don't think, you know, we're going to see a lot of change with Aleppo. I don't think we're going to see, when Trump is inaugurated, I don't think we're going to see, you know, more aid, more troops. I don't know. I don't have high hopes for Aleppo. I mean, it's already fallen. I feel terribly. I think everybody has a very soft spot for what's happening there right now. But I just don't see him taking, you know, any sort of action, at least in the first 100 days. I just don't think that's on his radar.
The
right
other
now.
Story that I think is underreported, and I have it actually on what story may unfortunately may be remembered in 50, 100, 500 years, is another foreign policy issue for the United States, which is our relationship with China. Mm. China, of course, became the bad guy in the sort of debate cycle, the campaign cycle with Donald Trump talking about we got a bad deal with China, we're going to make China pay up this and that. And you see China doing a lot of militarizing sort of these sort of moments of like puffing out the chest and things to sort of test, you know, where the United States is at. And that seems to be a little bit underreported as well, that the South Sea and everything that's happening there, that's not a good situation.
And I think a lot of people missed the story too late this week that, you know, the U.S. kind of returned the favor and moved some F-22 stealth Raptor fighters to Australia to kind of get in the theater there. So there's a little bit of kind of saber rattling already. You know, with Trump not even in office, and he kind of walked right into it with, you know, taking the call from the Taiwan leadership. And I think you're right; that's going to be a potential flashpoint, because I don't think, you know, who knows? Maybe Trump's done a ton of homework since the debates, but I don't know that he's exactly prepared to kind of deal with that sort of geopolitical situation there.
And how much does he need to? I mean, is this something where the United States military in the East, you know, can handle itself? They know this is another story that I feel like, you know, you see a headline in The Guardian or you see something and you're like, what's happening? And if you don't understand that this has been happening for decades, mm-hmm. Sort of fight over that South Sea area and China and Japan and the U.S., it's a constant battle.
Well, and Obama addressed that as well today, not to keep going back to the press conference, was kind of a really wide-ranging press conference and he was asked a lot of questions. And this came up again, and he basically said, the context here is that you have to know that Taiwan is absolutely, basically not negotiable for China.
Right.
And it's been that way for a long time.
A one China, right?
So when Trump says, you know, why do we really have to follow the one China policy? You have set off some major, major alarm bells there.
We have policies already that are in place. And, you know, if he wants to change them once he gets in, okay, you know, do it the proper way, you know, go through the motions and introduce legislation or have the Congress do that or whatnot. But I think... you know, do we want more jobs in the United States? Yes. Do we want more goods made and manufactured in the United States to keep our goods here? Yes. And it should we be paying and China not, you know, on imports and exports?
Right.
Absolutely. You know, I think these are all things, again, being an American, you want jobs here and you want to impose tariffs and whatnot on other countries. If we're paying to export, then they should be as well. I get that, but I don't think you want to anger China at this point, especially, as Jeff said, with existing rules and laws that are already in place, especially when it comes to Taiwan.
Listen to this conversation, you guys. We just talked about Russia, yeah. China,
Merry Christmas,
Syria.
Everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. There's a lot. I mean, you just start to like pile these up just in 1 week. The stories that are sort of happening around the globe that the U.S. has interest in is starting to bubble up. Jeff Cohen, Andre Darlis in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll start the winners and losers from this week's news as we reload 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Andre Darlis, Jeff Cohen in studio. We're reloading this week's news. It's time for the winners and the losers. I always like to start with the losers, right? The winner is just boring. And I think there's one big loser this week, and it has to be a certain alderman from the 20th Ward who was indicted on federal bribery and fraud. Was it? What was the other? Was it
wire fraud?
Wire fraud. Yeah. Willie Cochran, the 20th Ward alderman. You know, we'll get into the story. We talked about it on the show. But the surreal part of this was the fact that he was in council when the story broke, when your paper broke the story.
Well, I was going to say, but it's bad enough that he's a former police officer. It's bad enough that he ran as a reformer right after the last alderman in the ward went to prison,
Randy
Troutman. It's bad enough that you're going to get indicted, you know, after all these things you allegedly do. Then you basically get sandbagged in front of everybody at the council meeting. And we were just discussing off air whether he had some knowledge of that. Was it an act of defiance?
He must have. I mean, they don't do this. This isn't a sting.
Right.
You know, they're not like giving the story to the paper to embarrass him while he's sitting there in counsel.
No, I mean, the federal court moves very slowly, you know, the federal justice system. And the newspaper, I can tell you without violating any confidences, we had an idea of that it was coming the day before. And we're working to, you know, see if we could confirm it. And we decided to wait. So I'm sure his lawyer was aware. So, I mean, this if you've heard from him all along since the news broke that he was under investigation, he has been kind of defiant and said he's done.
So he did this as mostly like a pride thing.
Innocent. Yeah, sure. Like he's what do I have to hide
right?
from?
The circumstances surrounding this, like Jeff said, when that broke, we got the Tribune alert and we were watching on the closed circuit feed and he was there. And it was the day that they brought the World Series trophy to the council. So you have
very Chicago moment talking about the Cubs.
Right, I forget the alderman who was in the Cubs jersey and standing and taking pictures, and we're saying, you know, it's a federal indictment. They have every right to go in and arrest Willie Cochran during the city council meeting, which they didn't do. And then afterwards, you see Marian Ahern, you know, with her Facebook Live trying to ask him questions, and he's running down the hallway.
There's a foot race.
It's not supposed to happen like that.
No. Boy, you know what? And I would almost say that the city council, you know, clump the city council as losers for the week, too. Just because of, you know, how many, what is this now since 1972?
29 convicted since 72.
29 convicted.
Right.
And you're not talking about, I mean, Willie Cochran makes a great salary. He makes, what, $110,000 a year or whatnot as an alderman. He gets a $60,000 plus per year police pension. He's doing very well. And the amount of money that he allegedly took from his campaign fund to gamble, and you're so bold, you go to the ATM, you know, you're withdrawing $20,000 from your campaign fund.
Now, he says it's all lies. He's even come out since saying, I will be, you know,
exonerated.
I'll be exonerated. Yeah. This is all lies. But it's hard. I mean, when you're talking about taking money out of certain accounts,
that's going to be difficult. I think he's probably talking more about, you know, they allege that he essentially shook down people who were trying to get things done in the war.
Right.
I mean, that's his word against theirs in some form. I mean, you could probably try to do away
with
that.
So maybe he's talking about specific things.
Going to the ATM across the street from the casino or whatever, that's a little tougher.
And paying for his daughter's college.
I did think that Mayor Emanuel's response to it was somewhat thought-provoking in the way that he said, you know what, this is not just a thing in Chicago. You want to pin it on some sort of Chicago problem, and, you know, this is Chicago corruption because you saw the headlines. Here we go again.
Right.
But that's happening in Alabama. It's happening in New York City. It's happening everywhere. Yeah. There's always going to be a politician who is dishonoring the public trust or whatever, however he said it anecdotally. But I mean, there's something to that. I mean, Chicago's got a bad reputation, but this isn't necessarily a unique thing to this town.
It's not a unique problem here. And I mean, you can even talk about other major cities. New Orleans has a major corruption problem. I think part of the unique issue here is the power that aldermen wield on a local level. I mean, you really can't get anything built in a ward without getting the approval of the alderman. That creates a unique situation where it's you and the alderman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we see, I mean, some of these amounts, yeah, they're small, but that's because it's somebody just, you know, sliding a little bit over just to make it go a little bit faster. That's been happening forever. Even in this situation, like I said, former police officer running this ward after Arenda and still happens.
Yeah, right. He replaces Arenda Trotman, who
Cliff Kelly was a 20th ward alderman.
4 years for the same thing.
Did you know that? Cliff Kelly went to jail or was part of the corruption. They have a long line of corrupt politicians in the 20th ward. I'd almost put the loser as a 20th ward.
Well, Arenda's the one who said, you know, all politicians are hoes here. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, I mean, turning to the winners, I mean, the losers, that obviously city council and Willie Cochran, another black eye for Chicago politics. But the winner, I'd say Chicago bicyclists. There was a story that came out of DePaul University, the Chaddock Institute, about that it was probably safer and a better, rule of the road for bikers to be able to roll through stop signs, to use them as yield signs, to be able to use red lights as stop signs, almost like we unofficially do. And that has been a big issue and a point of contention because you can get a ticket for that. It also causes confusion and accidents. But this report came out and said, no, that's a safer way than trying to put the rules of the road, the rules of the driver on the biker. That's a win for bikers. Even though the city has not adopted anything, that at least says that they're not necessarily, you know, huge scofflaw lawbreakers that are just, you know, in the wild, wild west.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't do a ton of biking in the city. When I do, I'm absolutely terrified, to be honest with you, and I'm always glad when it's over. But I think, just in my brief experience, it does seem safer to me, and I think it kind of takes away from drivers who might be aggressive toward cyclists the whole energy of, well, why don't they have to stop at stop signs and they disobey? Yeah. Well, guess what? Now they don't necessarily have to, so why don't you not? Hit them.
I bike along the lakefront normally. Yeah. I rarely will come into the city streets and the side streets, especially in the loop. I know there's great bike paths, throughout the neighborhoods. It's just, it's too hectic. I love to bike, but I'll stay along the lakefront.
I don't bike that much at all anymore, but when I would take Kinsey, which is, has the you go all the way out to Kinsey and it goes up Milwaukee and there's a great route. But to get there, like right here around the House of Blues, and it is the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
You're like, my knee is touching a car.
It has the
right
plastic little barriers
not
that
even
pop
it,
up.
But like, I mean, when you get to a certain spot between Clark Street, right there, like in that where there's just traffic, is just like, it's like Manhattan, New York City, where, I mean, I honestly have a car, like, wheels on both knees. And you don't know if any, you're just hoping everybody's turning
I always
turning
feel
right.
like it's a matter of time, and if I'm out here for 100 hours, one of those hours is going to be bad. And just randomly, the way
we'll remember
works.
That in 500 years. Right.
Yeah. Andre Darlish, Jeff Cohen in studio. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get the update on tonight's news, and we'll come back, and we'll do the rabbit hole stories. We got some good stuff tonight from the panel, so stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. We're breaking down. We're reloading this week's news. Andrea Darlis from the Cochran Show, news reporter, longtime co-star and anchor Works for WGN TV.
Oh, yeah,
TV
news anchor,
and
sure,
on the,
yeah.
On the weekend, you do everything.
Long-time GN employee, yeah. 19 years. I can't, you know, somebody asked me that.
19 years, that's great.
19 years last month.
All right, so we got we have 12. We have a year
okay.
to get the blowout party ready.
Okay, yeah.
20 years.
That's right.
We got to do
yeah.
a 20
Oh, big bash. Yeah, yeah big we'll bash. Go to Greektown. We'll do something fun.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Jeff Cohen, a reporter for the Chicago Tribune. All right, so let's talk about the rabbit hole story, because this is one that really is the way I always define it is a story that just you kind of went with, maybe clicked another link to learn more about it, or just were just fascinated. It's not necessarily the biggest story of the week, but it's something that someone put some effort into report. I think the one that is the biggest crossover, and we kind of all agree, is what's happening in North Carolina. The I guess the state house is Republican.
Right.
The outgoing governor is Republican. Mm-hmm. Democrat won an election. It's very contested. It's
right,
close,
Cooper.
Right?
Yeah.
Cooper wins. He's about to take over. I mean, it's just like political drama, right? I mean, right before he's about to take over, they go, wait, one more emergency session. And what do they do?
Right,
one
more emergency session to limit the powers of the governor's office. So essentially, not that many hours ago, McCrory signed legislation that would limit the powers of his successor, who's going to be in office in a few weeks. And this comes after this all started with it came on the national radar anyway with the North Carolina bathroom
right.
rules. Mm-hmm. Kind of the transgender bathroom issue is where people started paying attention to it. That's what cost Charlotte the NBA All-Star game and a lot of companies pulled out of North Carolina. So it's been a very bitter contest down there. It was a very close election. It was, I think, it wound up being a few thousand votes.
It looked like he wasn't going to concede, right?
And it's kind of a purple state anyway. You know, it kind of went back and forth for mm-hmm. Obama, and then went Republican. So it's kind of an interesting state, and it's a little bit of a microcosm for the country. And I think that this move today, it just goes to show the kind of politics we're going to be looking at going forward, maybe, where it's literally a scorched earth approach. You lose, you kind of burn the bridges down as you leave, and try to just be as nasty as you can to them.
And what is it? It limits the powers, and we're talking about, and they're very specific things. They're like appointees.
Right.
The ability to, now that the Senate gets to confirm appointments, which is usually
right.
not done
and
in
also,
the state.
And also jobs.
Job,
it reduces
like
the number
jobs,
of state
right.
employees that the governor can hire directly, which is,
that's what
that's
it is.
Political
that's politics,
power.
Right.
Right. So it would take that from 1,500 to 425.
Now, they argue, this is where it gets interesting. This is that sort of devil's advocate. They say this is something that we have wanted to do all along. This is something that, going back, the Republicans want to shrink government. They want to change the way that the structure is in North Carolina for the good of the people. Not unlike what Bruce Rauner's talking
right.
about in Illinois.
Right.
It's just the timing right before they even admit it. They admitted in the story. They said, yes, it's because a Democrat's coming in, but they almost ran on this concept and they want to finish the job.
Well, I put this in the same basket as the whole fight with the Supreme Court. Obama wasn't allowed to name somebody to Supreme Court. There was talk before the election that if Hillary did win, that the Republicans were going to, put a brick on any nominee that she put forward for the court, basically hold the Supreme Court hostage for 4 years. So it's that kind of fighting that I think we're looking at.
Oh, man.
Going forward. And so it's just, it's kind of unfortunate, but it does raise the question, are Republicans just better fighters? Are they better at politics than Democrats are?
It's completely suspect that they do this. If they said they wanted to do this all along, you wait till December 16th, you have a special session at 2:00 in the afternoon, and you sign this, you put forth this type of legislation. If we were not living in Illinois and kind of watching this in reverse, I think it would be more surprising to me. It's surprising in general that it's happening there, but watching this every day happen, with really, Governor Rauner, in so many ways, and I hope you don't get 1,000 phone calls on this, Justin, but he really is being held hostage by the Democratic-controlled House and Senate in the state. He really is. And when you have, I know there's checks and balances, but when you have a system like that where you can't get anything done, look what's happening to our state. Illinois was just named, I think, worst state in the nation when it comes
there was
to
some study, right?
Yeah, we haven't had a balanced budget in years.
But
a
doesn't
full,
this? But
balanced
I guess
budget.
I agree to an extent. But I wonder if and Jeff, it's to your point about whether or not we're seeing the art of compromise and the politics of compromise erode, and whoever's the party in charge is now like, this is the way it is,
right?
As opposed to some compromise, because we've seen, the way that Governor Rauner came in and said, this is what I'm going to do, and there's no negotiation. This is what it's going to be. I mean, he set the tone for a conflict. And instead of this sort of – and I'm not saying that it's easy. I mean, we saw with President Obama and the Republican-controlled Congress, I don't even know. I mean, we thought it couldn't get any lower. Mm-hmm. It seems like what we're seeing in North Carolina is lower. I mean, you can't.
And what a dangerous precedent, too. What a dangerous precedent for Democrats or Republicans to be setting this dictatorship mentality of I'm in and this is the way it's going to happen now. And really, I mean, what a low blow to pass legislation that restricts the incoming. You know, it's almost it almost is as childish. Remember when Bill Clinton left office and they took all the W's off the keys?
Right.
You know, because it's George W. Bush. I mean, it's almost, you know, a much higher
level.
Well,
I made the joke earlier in the show that it's like, you know, you hear the horror stories of people who get foreclosed on and they take paint and they put it down the sink or they put, you know, they try to ruin the pipes. It's this kind of idea that they're like, well, we can't have it. Nobody can. Burn it to the ground.
Right.
Exactly.
I don't know what's happening. I mean, it just feels like there needs to be some sort of, I don't know, maybe they all need to take, like, you know, like if you get a speeding ticket, you got to take a couple hours of driving class, a course.
They should all go see Hamilton.
There should be a political course.
Yeah, they all have to go see Hamilton.
It's not always about politics. That's the thing, is the whole idea of serving the common good and doing things for the good of the country, you never, you know, that's lost at this point.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Okay, let's keep going. Another of the rabbit hole stories we were kind of talking about in the break was the Tribune story today about pharmaceuticals. Essentially, the Tribune investigative team, Ray Long being one who's a guest on the show, goes out and goes to different pharmacies undercover with two prescriptions that, if taken together, could kill you, and to see what the pharmacies would do. And not good.
Yeah, I don't know how, you know, super scientific it was. It was certainly gumshoey. You know, it was kind of like old fashioned, just to kind of go out and see what would happen, and then they just reported the results. But yeah, they would go and take, you know, a couple slips, or maybe they had the prescription on one slip in some instances. But I asked Ray about this earlier today, and he kind of described, he said, yeah, I would just go in, I would kind of, you know, dawdle up with my two slips, put them down, see what would happen. And a lot of times the pharmacist would take them both, go away for 2 or 3 minutes, come back, here you go, sir, here's your, you know, potentially
and these
fatal
were,
drug
these were a combination that was specific, but it was antibiotic and essentially a statin, like an anti-cholesterol. But the idea being, it's not like they picked two random crazy drugs that put together would kill you. You know, like elephant tranquilizers. These are things people take.
And it really did concern a lot of people who, I think, and myself included, I assume if I go to get a prescription filled, that somebody is plugging that into a computer. Right. And if this is a possibility, a giant red alarm appears somewhere and you get told. And Ray told me, he said, yeah, that's what you'd think, but there's so many warnings and restrictions and things with every drug that, you know, a lot of times pharmacists will put things in and get, you know, 32, I don't know, I'm pulling the number out, but get a bunch of different warnings and not really read all the way through everything and just kind of assume that the doctor's explained it and off you go.
Ask questions. Read the little slip that comes with it.
That's scary.
It's true.
And it always says I take one of the anti-cholesterol medicines, it always says, don't take this with grapefruit juice. Right, it always says that, and I don't know why. And I'm always like, yeah, and I don't know why. And I'm getting closer in my life to testing that. Like, I feel like every day I'm like, I go past the
grapefruit. Pete brings in a nice bag of fresh grapefruit.
Put down the grapefruit juice.
Exactly. But now, after this story, I'm like, I ain't touching that grapefruit juice.
No,
you
gotta be careful.
Because these were like, these combinations were fatal. I mean, they were like kidney failure and death.
Well, the story actually includes a couple of quotes from pharmacists who did catch it. And one of them actually told, I don't know if it was Ray or somebody else, if you take these two together, you'll be absolutely on the floor. This is a major problem. You know,
so which one do you take, Justin? No.
Right.
The one that you can't take grapefruit juice
with. Yeah, this man some grapefruit juice.
Yeah, right.
The other story you had is, Jeff, it was about the spray paint kids. I'm interested in this. I don't know anything about this.
You know, let me pull this up on my phone to give everybody the exact coordinates for this. But it was a Globe and Mail story. It actually, I think it was originally published more than a week ago, so maybe we're slightly out of bounds. But I saw it on social media this week. And it was really well done, I thought. I started reading it, and I was trying to go to sleep, and it's a really long story, and I wound up, you know, scrolling through it as my, you know, puppy was trying to get me to go to sleep by a reporter named Mark McKinnon. And essentially it starts in 2011. It's kind of a narrative style with a group of boys who, in the wake of the Arab Spring, just kind of did what was meant to be almost a harmless spray paint job on their school. It said basically, Assad, you're next, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it turned into a gigantic situation
where I did see this.
They rounded up 23 boys and anybody who had anything to do with it or put him up to it, and they basically held them in captivity. And everybody in their hometown started going berserk, and it became a national story. And eventually the Assad regime released these kids, but at that point it was kind of too late. The wave had taken over, and some of the protests had gotten violent. The regime had responded with gunfire at some of these protests, and it all sort of started with this goofy graffiti. But the story was great, I thought, because the reporter tracked down many of these kids, including the spray paint kid who now is in Vienna or somewhere. So it tracked the entire Syrian conflict through the eyes of these kids as they tried to escape and migrate through Greece. And it was told chronologically. So at every step, you know, when Russia gets involved, it tells you where the kid was and what was going on in the hometown and, you know, what parts destroyed and they can't go back now. And the kid's kind of like, yeah, I was just trying to spray paint the school. Like,
makes you think. Express myself and be creative.
Makes you think about what you might start.
Worth tracking down.
They should use that as an anti-graffiti ad here in Chicago.
Yeah, I called it Spray Paint Kid. I think the actual headline is "The Graffiti Kids Who Sparked the Syrian War." Globe and Mail.
Jeez.
And the last rabbit hole story, which I think is one that we've all felt, is the passing of Alan Thicke.
Alan Thicke.
That was a big deal for many people.
It sure was.
69 years old, you know, and it was interesting because, you know, you think of Alan Thicke from Growing Pains, but what I really got wrapped up in the rabbit hole is how much he actually contributed to Hollywood. Like, it wasn't just Growing Pains, and it wasn't just singing Different Strokes. You know, that's what people know. But he was a writer on Fernwood Tonight with, you know, like, he could have, like, there was also, I can't remember the show off the top of my head, but he had, like, all these, like, he was the guy for a lot of shows in the 70s where the go-to kind of guy. And it was just interesting to, like, almost follow his path and how all of the pop culture that he's affected in his life, in a very rich life. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
And all the tweets that he got, too. I mean, everybody from Alyssa Milano to Bob Saget. He was just on This Is Us. He just had a – he played himself on This Is Us. But everything I've heard, just different people, Steve Cochran has interviewed him a couple of times.
Yeah.
Just a heck of a nice guy, you know.
Kind of the beloved American dad character, you know, that so many – actors have done, and they wind up kind of in that category where everybody loves them.
And just again, as you say, Justin, touching so many lives and to be in great shape, played hockey, and have a heart attack, and you know, just it was just so sudden and so young.
Yeah,
he really is young.
Well,
and his son was there, I guess, too, playing hockey with him.
Yeah, and I think Mark DiCarlo was there too on the ice,
I saw
playing
that
with
on
him
GM,
too.
Yeah.
And yeah, just it's just, you know, it hits really close to home. Just seems like a great guy.
Andre Darlis, Jeff Cohen. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we will do what story we think will be remembered in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now. We're reloading this week's news here on The Download. Stay with us. All right, it's Download 720 WGN. Andre Darlis, Jeff Cohen. What a pleasant night.
Great.
Been fun.
A lot of fun.
You know, we thawing out a little from the snow.
Yeah.
With Jeff and Andre. All right, so this is the big question. What story from this week will be remembered 500 years from now? You want to start us off, Andre? You want to start?
All right, I'll start. It's going to be cliche, but I'm going to say Donald Trump. Everything Trump this week. Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you can take any facet of it, if you want to pick the biggest facet of it, I would say that the Russian hacking. I mean, this is going to be – this whole election, don't you think, Jeff? This whole election, the process, the Electoral College, everything. This is the most polarizing election I have ever seen, many of us have ever witnessed in our lives. It's went just beyond Democrat and Republican, and now you have interference from Russia.
Well, by default, Trump's the incoming president, so he's going straight in the history books almost whatever he does.
Right.
All right, that's a great one, yeah. And
you too.
I mean, I agree. I think the Tillerson stuff, that's the one that scares me the most. The Secretary of State, who is a diplomat, whose job it is to sort of, you know, negotiate and maneuver around sort of our place in the world, is a guy who's a lot of pressure on this one individual who does not have a lot of government experience to go in and deal with the Chinas and the Russias and all the other countries of the world.
And the conflicts of interest, too. We talked about this, I think, a little bit off the air, too. Not even just Ivanka moving into the house and it being for the first family now instead of just, you know, the first lady. Beyond that, the business interest, the overseas ties. the international politics of it all. I don't know how he's going to skirt around this. Yeah.
All right, what do you got, Jeff?
Well, I agree with you. I'm going to kind of bend the rules and do two. I think, you know, to piggyback on yours, I think anything with the Electoral College, I think going forward, this could be the election. If there is an impact on the Electoral College in the future, people will say, well, there was this election, and, you know, it would be explained to kids, and they'll not believe about the Russian hacking part
right.
and all that. But, you know, the
old fable.
Really, to have her win the popular vote by almost 3 million and the way this is all unfolded, I think if there ever were pressure on the Electoral College, maybe now. My second one is back to Aleppo and Syria. Again, I think just with Syria's place currently in as a linchpin in the entire Middle East going forward and Trump walking into that disaster on day one, I think we'll definitely be feeling and talking about that 5-10 and further down.
I got two as well. I feel very pessimistic that, you know, at some point or another, history says there will be another world war. You know, I think that, you know, I obviously it's very pessimistic and very dark to think that way. But I feel like there are a lot of different sort of flashpoints this week that could be the sort of Sarajevo, if you will, of, you know, of a World War III. When you think about what's happening in the South China Sea, when you think about even to the we didn't talk about it at all, but the sort of I think it is. Definite now, the appointment of the hardliner in Israel. We didn't talk about that.
And China seizing the drone, too.
I mean, you're starting to see a lot of these sort of like little points where we might, you know, be like the history like book version of how, what started sort of a chain event that could be the fall of Aleppo. I mean, there's a lot of these things this week when it comes to the world. That's one. And the second is GM saying they're getting into autonomous driving. This was the story this week that the self-driving cars, we saw one instance where I think it was, I forgot what town it was, they pulled them off the street. They pulled the Ubers off the street and they said, no, we're not doing that. And at the same time, GM comes forward and says, we're going to invest in, you know, I think they're calling it autonomous drive. I don't know what they're not calling it self-driving.
I don't know if I'm the only one out there that I'm rooting for it. I don't really care to drive. I'd rather read my phone and just,
I'll just take a drone.
Yeah, sure. China will seize it. It'll be
China, right?
It's one story. We already said
they'll be delivering packages and us.
Andrea Darlis, Jeff Cohen, I can't thank you guys enough. What a pleasure to have you here tonight. Happy holidays,
Thanks, Justin.
See you soon.
Appreciate it.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Hannah Stanley takes over at 11. She's in for Patty. I saw Patty today. She was Mrs. Cratchit to my Bob in the Christmas Carol that the WGN players put on. We're having a play. That's what it was good, man. And I have to echo the same sentiment that Ro Khan echoed about Bill Leff. Oh, my. There were probably like maybe 1,100 lines in that play for Scrooge. Everyone else is backseat. Everyone else has one little paragraph, and then you're off for 10 pages. There is half of every page in the transcript, which was probably about 65 pages long, was a Scrooge, what have I done, like moment. And Bill has to be on stage the entire time. I don't think he left the stage. So great. I mean, hey, he was in Major League. And Major League 2. I think it was Major League 2. Did you know that? Adam Witt joins us.
Oh, I didn't know that. Hello.
Adam Witt,
hello,
of course.
Hello, WGN audience.
Of Schadenfreude and of the movie guys in L.A. in town for Christmas time. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Bill Leff does the was the midday, you know, Bill. But the his big star turn is he's the fans. Like, he's one of the fans.
Oh, in the outfield?
Yeah.
One of those is Bill Leff?
Yeah.
That, like, has, like, the little drum and their little, the Last Faithfuls?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I think he's in one and two. Isn't he? Did they make a comeback? I don't know if he made it into two, but
making
the point
is. Hey, out of that with the World Series? That, like, Bill Leff reprise?
I think so. I think so. But I was hoping he would bring some of it out today. Like, there'd be some references to Scrooge and then the Indians outfield, but there wasn't.
And Charlie
Sheen.
He
didn't
Sheen,
do it.
No,
he
no references to Charlie
no
Sheen.
No reference to Charlie Sheen. They weren't
because
asking, so.
There are a lot of ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future for Charlie Sheen himself,
right?
If you did the Charlie Sheen story and you had a ghost of Christmas, you know, the Ferris Bueller one, and then the modern one.
That's right. Charlie Sheen does show up in Ferris Bueller at the end. That's right.
He does.
All right, so tonight Adam Witt joins us because he just came out of the ArcLight Cinema to partake in Rogue One,
Fresh.
The new Star Wars movie that is out this weekend. That is, I guess, a movie. let's talk about it. This is a movie that, as I mean, well, a very highly anticipated film. This is essentially, and we've talked about it on the show, you and I have, this concept that Star Wars has sort of laid out what they're going to do with the Enterprise, the franchise, for the next 5-10 years.
Absolutely.
This is sort of the first of the side projects, if you will.
Yeah, they're like these little one-off stories. They don't have an episode number or anything like that. They're just like another story from the Star Wars universe, which is kind of refreshing and interesting. Like, we haven't had this yet. Everything has had this, like, utmost importance of telling the story of Darth Vader or continuing the original, you know, The Force Awakens continues the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And this is one that's just, like, one and done. Which, you know,
and this really comes from Disney taking over from the George Lucas empire. George Lucas obviously still a big part of Star Wars, but this is Disney's way of getting as much, sucking as much juice out of the Star Wars franchise as they can.
Long time coming for this. So they're like, all right, we know we can't put out an episode every year. We can't put out episode 8 this year. It's just too quick. So they had this idea that they would put out these individual stories and bring these artists in to give a perspective from the original trilogy that's, you know.
And so we'll see a lot, and in the years to come, we'll see movies, the Han Solo sort of side project where it's like young Han Solo, things that have nothing to do essentially with the story arc of the 9 episodes or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. And next year we're going to have episode 8, which is a continuation of The Force Awakens with Kylo Ren and Rey and all those characters. And then in 2 years from now, we're going to have the Han Solo, young Han Solo movie, which is kind of like this one. It goes back to episode 4, you know, which is Star Wars. And so, yeah, that's going to tell. And you know who they cast as Lando Calrissian? Did you hear that?
Yeah, is it Daniel Glover?
Not Danny Glover. What's his name? Donald Glover.
Donald Glover. Donald Glover. Sorry, I messed that up. Yeah, from Atlanta.
Community. In Atlanta, yeah.
Now, have you seen Atlanta?
I have not.
Watch that show.
Yeah.
It's the best show of 2016.
He's Donald Glover.
I don't want to call him Daniel Glover, but Donald Glover. Yeah, he's amazing. And his new record, the Childish Gambino record, is great, too.
I heard this as well. Yeah. I mean, he's like a legitimate artist.
He is. He's amazing. Like, all right. Let me ask. Okay, so let's take people who don't necessarily know Star Wars or care. And I vacillate. I'm right in there.
You have your own perspective on it.
Let me ask, where does this take place? This actually has to take place before the first Star Wars, the 1977 one, in the timeline.
And I am as big a fan of George Lucas as you're going to meet. Like, I've read all of his biographies and stuff like that. I'm a huge fan of THX 1138, American Graffiti. I could go on and on about it. And I will make you sick if you watch one of those movies with me about how much of a genius he is. And what I said about The Force Awakens, I said, George Lucas has done it again. Even though he wasn't involved, because it's his, you know, and it's the same thing. So the very opening crawl of Star Wars, the very first two lines is what this movie is.
And what are the two lines? It's
plans to the destructive force called the Death Star have been stolen by the rebels, right? So the great thing about George Lucas's original movie is there's so much there that they skip past.
Yeah, you're right. The movie starts with the big Star Destroyer chasing that little thing, and that's where Princess Leia's on that ship, and she gives the plans to R2-D2.
Yeah.
Right, they just gloss over. You pick it up right away because you're like, oh, they're being chased because they stole the plans.
Yeah, and that's such radical storytelling, which people forget because we've seen Star Wars so many times, but at the time to go, no, this is episode 4, you've missed 3 of them, and here we go. And it's like, what is going on? So there is so much chance to then tell, like, how did they steal the plans? How did the Death Star come about? I mean, all this stuff is just exists, and we're moving on. We're telling the last chapter in some ways in Star Wars Through Jedi of how Luke defeats Darth Vader. But who is Luke and who is Darth Vader? And, you know, that's the brilliance of the storytelling.
So these guys, this happens. This is essentially the first two lines of Star Wars.
Yeah, right.
Right.
I mean, and it's the rebellion. And, you know, as a kid, when I saw Star Wars, it's like, well, what is a rebellion? Who are these rebels? It just never really landed. It was just that adventure. But this has the rebels who have been under the pressure of the Empire. You know, their cities are filled with stormtroopers and this sort of stuff. I mean, if you can imagine right now, soldiers walking around and asking you for your papers and that sort of, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's where we are in Star Wars. So this takes place there, how they get the plans for the Death Star, which leads to Princess Leia giving it to.
All right, well, we'll get Adam's sort of review and, you know, I don't know if we say star review, 4-star, a thumbs up, thumbs down, whatever. I don't know what's trademarked, what's not. Adam Witt of Movie Guys and, of course, Schadenfreude in studio because he's in Chicago. Great to see you, buddy.
Yeah,
all right, we'll take
thanks.
A break. And awesome. We'll get more on Rogue One. Stay with us.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Give me the Star Wars.
Beats by Zim. Coming up with the, that's the only song I would think about playing at this point.
An American treasure right here, Pete Zimmerman. An American treasure.
Adam Witt from the Movie Guys in studio. We're talking about Rogue One, which he just saw. All right, so let's get to the movie. The movie is different than Star Wars in the sense that you're not getting the Luke Skywalkers and the Han Solos and those kind of characters. But let's talk about the characters they do bring forth.
Yes.
And like that is like very Force-like for me. Bring forth.
Bring forth. Very,
is Obi-Wan Kenobi in this one?
Bring forth the sequel.
Does he show up in this one?
No Obi-Wan
you know what?
In this one.
I'm out.
You're out?
I was hoping for a middle-aged Ben Kenobi. Then we already had young Ben Kenobi.
Yes, yes. Oh, I would love to see Ewan McGregor show up for episode 8. Yeah. How great would that be? Because Luke's going to, you know, Luke shows up at the end of The Force Awakens. You know he's going to have some Obi-Wan visions in the
it's
next movie.
It's got to be a vision, right? But
yeah.
But like this would have been the one where like a 55-year-old
yeah.
Obi-Wan Kenobi could have showed up in this one, right?
Yeah.
That would have worked out time-wise?
Yeah.
Or no, it was only, how many months is it before the Star Wars... How many years is it before the Star Wars New Hope starts?
Basically, right before. Like, it's you know, I mean, it takes place, you know, who knows, weeks, month before or something like
I guess
that?
He was a hermit recluse, right? So he would have been jamming out.
He was hanging out on Tatooine watching baby Luke grow up.
Scrap that idea. Scrap that. Let's start again.
Bratty Luke at that point is like, ugh, this kid. I don't know if I can put up with him enough to save the universe.
All right, so let's talk about the characters that are in this movie. So
yeah, I mean, the main one is Felicity Jones. Yeah, I don't know. She's on something. I got her confused for a while with Felicity.
She's
the TV
in
show.
The actress. She's in the Spider-Man reboot with... Garfield.
Okay.
Andrew Garfield and Jamie Foxx.
Okay.
That they show on TBS relentlessly. And then you watch it and you're like, oh, this is terrible. But she's like she's almost like a bad guy with
She plays Jyn Erso, who is connected to I won't tell you, but the person who put the Death Star together. So that she happens to have a connection to the information. And
okay.
So she ends up being some of the rebellion, which is already, you know, going against the Empire, which is, you know, taken over and stormtroopers walking the streets. And she happens to be someone that they find out, oh, she can get the information for us. And so she becomes, you know, a leader in this rebellion.
No, so, I mean, is it the same formula? Like, I will say this from a Star Wars novice. I can recognize that all of the movies... Sans maybe the weird ones with Jar Jar or you know the ones that that you know, happened in the 2000s. They follow the same formula. At the end, there's a big air fight and they're fighting around and there's a bunch of lasers. Pew 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 pew.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. I mean, it's follow the same thing because in the trailer, I'm like, oh yeah, they're gonna do these are all the same shots.
Yes and no, because of course we're introduced to this character who is an innocent at the beginning, who ultimately becomes a very important presence in the thing, just like Luke Skywalker. And of course, there's a big battle at the end when they try and go for the plans.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, it's that it doesn't go easy.
Right.
They don't get those plans very easily. So all that is true, but this setting, and you know, like Luke Skywalker was this farmer, this boy who was never going to get out of Modesto. I'm sorry, that's George Lucas's story, but that's put into Luke's. He was never going to get off Tatooine, and this life of adventure came calling to him. And that's where it kind of diverges because it's a little more militaristic in that way. It's not this innocent kid who is thrust into this thing he doesn't even know about, and it turns out he's a Jedi, you know? In this one, it's. She is yearning for the father.
You could say it. She's ISIS.
She's ISIS.
Yeah, they're ISIS. I get it. I was going to say, is there any? I mean, it is a Hollywood film. Are there any sort of storylines that are Trumpian? In the way that it's produced?
You know, that's really funny. I had this discussion immediately after with the person I saw it with, and I was like, I just think it's hilarious because, you know, I mean, Lucas wrote the original one about Nixon, you know? It's that movie's about Nixon. Darth Vader is Nixon. So when he came to do the prequels, they go, oh, this is some political thing about George W. Bush. And I was like, technically it's about Nixon. You're making the reference to George W. Bush being Nixon. So I think it's funny. There's almost, I could just say literally no politics in it. It is a Star Wars thing. But if you want to put it in there.
You can get it in there.
Of
you can squeeze it in there.
But I got to say, guys, calm down.
There's no.
Like Trump's guys. Like, just seriously, guys, calm
there's
down.
There's no guy with a cool uniform on the Death Star going, believe me. This is huge.
It's great. It's
gonna
huge.
Be great with
the
long
Death Star's
tie.
Great. It's going to destroy a lot of things. It's going to make things really great. It's a really good Death Star. This is the best one we've made. Yeah.
So overall, I mean, is this movie, the one thing I've heard is it's a violent movie. It's more violent than the Star Wars movies. And I think the big question and the question that seems to be bubbling up, is it a kids movie?
It is, but definitely more teenagers, I would think, and definitely people that understood where, like, what Star Wars was referencing that took place before the movie we've all come to watch with Star Wars. Like, the idea that that does come down, if you were a younger kid, I think you more just understand that as Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and that sort of stuff. You don't realize that there's a rebellion. You don't realize what a rebellion is. So I think for a little older kids, that lands more. Like, oh, a rebellion, rebels, you know, I mean, literally teenagers rebel more. More than other people, I think that just, you know, comes up. But I think for younger kids, I would suggest watching Star Wars before you go to it, so they remember the beginning,
right?
Where the plans.
I love you for the fact that, you know, it started. I thought you were going to say, but for younger kids, it may be insensitive. But instead, you went for younger kids. Watch these Star Wars so you get the plot.
I'm a big supporter.
Down.
I'm a big supporter. You know, for younger kids, watch THX 1138 and explain that to them. And then watch American Graffiti and explain what music was back then.
Yeah. I love it. Adam Witt, the movie guys are talking Rogue One. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. And coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, Chris Jones is going to join us. We're going to talk a little Chicago theater, wrap up 2016. What a year.
Crazy, right?
A lot of politics, a lot of drama. Also some good stuff on the stage. that's my
not just
plot.
A lot of things and, closing, but yeah, actually yeah. things too.
Things too, and then and we'll continue to talk. We'll talk. This was our last. Will be our last hour of 2016 because we won't be back until after New Year's. So we'll have some almost New Year's resolutions or look aheads to 2017. Yeah. We'll also do coming up here on the download. So stay with us. Can I just say, Roger Badish? Oh my, that was the longest traffic report of all time.
A lot of traffic.
Sorry about that.
No, I don't. Apologies necessary, but I was like, oh my God. Like, you could have easily summed that up with every road in the Chicago area has got something going on.
And of course, with me, it's unusual that the one road people always warn me about when there's a flake falling.
Right.
Lakeshore Drive is clear. Thank you.
it was amazing. I was like,
I can just see the city. Wait a minute, Badish has to work tonight. There's snow. Let's get Lakeshore Drive. Let's clear it now.
That's exactly what they did. They're like, hey, we don't want any flack from Badish. Get up and down that North Lakeshore. Oh, it was amazing. I thought maybe I was like in a loop, like so it was like a you know, like a problem with the Matrix where I was like, what happened? And then I'm like, oh man, you're on University Park intersections. I love it. That's
well,
good stuff, man.
We got to make sure everyone's safe out there.
I love
it's going
right.
to be a rough night.
All right. Thank you, buddy.
All right.
There you go.
It's like rain in LA.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, it rains. Everybody goes nuts. And then the traffic report is like a half hour long.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I mean, Chicago's got a lot of problems tonight with the, not just the snow that's coming down, but here comes the cold weather. So it gets slick.
Yeah.
So what happens is the roads look clear, so you're like, let me open it up. Let me open it up, and then they're in a ditch.
I'm very happy. I haven't forgotten my walking in compacted snow steps. It's the straight down. You don't stride. You slip.
I know. I was a great post. I saw it on just about the idea of now you get this snow that came on tonight. Mm-hmm. And it covers up the ice for the people, the scofflaws who didn't, you know, that didn't shovel properly in front of their building. So it's just a sheet of ice in that one little spot. And now you put the snow on front of it. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, and it's not enough snow to actually shovel. It's just a blanket of it. If you look even here, it's like a blanket. And you're just going to have a lot of whoops on your hip coming up here in the next couple days.
Watch your hips, folks.
Watch your hips.
Pad your hips.
Might be. I don't understand how you don't see more sort of boutiques here on Michigan Avenue figuring out a way to fashionize hip padding, right? In the winter, like if you made that like a cool kind of thing that you would see like on the runway, like, and it was like, you know, like it was hot models and they had like
tailbone chic, like a little something, a little spring there, you know, boom, you hit that, you bounce right back up. That's a product,
right? Mm-hmm. Where is Steve Gadlin in a frying pan? We need him.
Where is he?
I got great news. This is his time slot.
I've got an invention.
Yeah, right. We got one. Great news for everybody out there in Download Nation right now that Steve Gadlin is returning in 2017. Mm-hmm. We kind of said, you know, he did the frying pan. He was the inventor who came on with a really creative ideas.
Uber for umbrellas, I think.
Yeah, Uberella.
Uberella.
And he's back, and he's going to come back. We were trying to figure it out because, you know, I'll be honest with you. I mean, he got a little bit, not gun shy, but he got a little depressed at the amount of just sort of like vitriol, like just venom that was coming from people.
It's tough to have that many ideas, you know?
Yeah.
And that many that suck, too. That's really tough.
That's a really double whammy.
You got to come on here.
So he is going to be coming back once a month coming up in 2017. That's the contract. It's signed, sealed, delivered. We are ready to go. So he will be, I think it's the final Friday of every month. So the first one that we will have him back is January 27th.
Mm. I anxiously await.
Yeah.
It's very interesting
stuff. It's going to be a great year. 2017 is going to be great. I'm excited. As you know or not know, this is our final broadcast of the download for 2016. Next week we're off. The Blackhawks have a lot, but we'll also have some fill-ins for the nights that we're gone. Pete, where are you heading, Pete? You're heading out of town, which is fun.
Going to New York City for
a
week.
I just went there about a month ago. It's a gem. It's a hidden gem. A lot of people don't know
about
it.
Heard it's pretty big.
It's big, but a lot of people they think they know it, they just don't, you know?
Well, I thought small town America voted for our current president, so I think New York's now kind of a small town, right? It's like that's the heartland, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
That's where he's from, yeah.
I had some Uber drivers in New York City that said that it's a huge disaster around Trump Tower in New York. Like, they just can't get through because of security plus the protests and things. That it's just, like, a screwed up. Isn't he right at Columbus Circle, like, right where essentially it becomes, like, the Upper West Side there, right by the park?
Yeah.
That's where his tower's at. And it's just, without that, it's a pain in the butt over
there. Yeah.
I just thought of something. I don't know if you've seen. This is a great idea. I'm going to go to Trump Tower, and I'm going to take a picture of myself flipping it off.
Ooh.
Start a trend, a hashtag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised nobody's done this.
I don't know. Wait, isn't there one here?
I could just do it here.
You do it right there.
Ugh.
I could do it.
I love that it'll be -5 on Sunday, and there'll still be some people out there doing that. Like, yeah. It is kind of funny to see that. I walk up and down the Michigan Avenue Bridge.
So you see people doing that all the time?
Oh, yeah. During the election, it was all the time. And you're just like, and it's, you have that moment where they recognize that you know, you're looking at them, and it just gets awkward for everybody because you're like, I'm embarrassed that you're going to put that on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, like, I get the sentiment. I don't have a problem with it, but I'm just like, you really just stop and give yourself a selfie and flip off a building?
Yeah.
All right.
And go a little secretive with your anti-president stuff. Like, it's people don't respond well to that. Like, you know, get a little smart with that.
Yeah,
you gotta be real cynic about that.
I think in 2017, I'm definitely gonna do more with hashtags.
You should hashtag more.
I should. I've been saying that in 2015. I know I said it in 2016, but I don't do enough hashtagging.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be my thing. I think in 2017, everyone's going to be like, hey, do you listen to the download? Oh, that's the hashtag guy. I think that's where I'll go. Right?
Hashtag listen. Is it just hashtag, or are you going to find special words people aren't really hashtagging, so that's yours?
Oh, yeah, that's what you got to do.
Hashtag.
Say what?
But hashtag like say aid. What? Hashtag what's happening now?
What I'm going to do is I'm going to spell out hashtag. So it's going to be a #, hashtag, and then my phrase.
I think you just hit on it.
Yeah.
Hashtag #. Right. I'm actually going to write hashtag #, because back in the day, that was on your phone, but you couldn't do anything with it. Right?
That's right.
I would have never invested in that letter as becoming useful.
The pound sign on the phone was always the button you would push to hope to do something.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be like, I think I put my account number in or whatever, and I'm just going to hit this and see what happens. And they became good at recognizing that was what people were doing. Mm-hmm. But then there were the utilities mostly that didn't. So you do all that and then you hit pound, they'd be like, main menu. And you're like, why do you have that? Why is that connected to the main menu?
That's the enter button of the nine button phone or whatever.
Right. 12 all right. So phone. We're going to go. We'll take a break and we'll come back and we will talk about what we're going to do in 2017. Stay with us. Here we go. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Coming up, Chris Jones is going to join us right after the news here at 10:30. We're talking about the year 2017. Some of the changes we're going to make, as this is our last broadcast of the download of 2016. One thing that I would like to see more of in 2017 is Poke Bowls.
Oh.
because I want to be the guy who confidently orders a bowl of raw tuna. You know, I just feel like this year, 2016, whenever I was given the opportunity to order a poke bowl, there were toppings and there were sauces and there were all these kind of things, and I just kind of melted into a puddle of just insecurity and anxiety.
You look like a guy who's done with mixing those ingredients with rice and seaweed.
Yeah.
Done. Give me the bowl.
This year, 2017, you're going to see it's going to be the year of the poke bowl.
Poke bowl, Justin. What I'm thinking of doing, I'm going to replace irony, right? Irony's kind of gone. You know, you voted a billionaire celebrity president to protect us from the vanity and elitism of another candidate. Then irony is dead, right? So I'm thinking of replacing it with sadness.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's strong.
Just saying things that are positive, but in a sad tone. I think that could be the new irony. I'm just thinking.
Yeah.
Thinking out loud.
Irony does need to be replaced. It's very 2016.
Right? It's gone.
That's right.
It's gone, man.
I'm going to, in 2017, I'm going to keep close tabs on the band One Direction.
Mm.
I just feel like, you know, I know it's a boy band, and I know they're going through a little hiatus kind of thing, but I think this is the year they get back together, they get all creative, and this could be their Sgt. Pepper's era.
Oh.
I really do. And I'm not just talking about the hairstyles. I think their music. I think if you're going to hedge a bet, One Direction 2017.
Rogue One Direction. I picture a whole crossover right there, actually.
There it is.
You know what I'm going to do in 2017? I've decided I'm going to watch and enjoy baseball and not complain about its lack of drama after this last World Series.
Right.
All is forgiven, baseball. You are not boring. You are the greatest sport ever invented.
Ever.
Period.
In 2017, I'm going to dedicate myself to more fantasy sports. And if I run out of sports, I'll just start playing other things.
Yeah, with Fantasy Highlight, once you're there, you're done, right?
Like Fantasy Congress, Fantasy Grocery Store Shopping. How about Fantasy Fantasies, where I fantasize about what my new fantasies would be in draft order?
Let's see. It's a tough week at work, so I'm going to play Unicorns. I'm going to play Unicorns, and I'm going to play Tom Cruise in Legend.
There you go.
I think I'm going to fax more in 2017. I'm just going to fax.
Smart.
I'm only going to give out
Bring
a fax
back.
Number, right?
Right.
I mean, you can fax me your number, and then I can call that, but that's how it starts.
2017, I want to bring back the half shirt. Like, I feel like it came back for women. There was a lot of showing off the midriff in the early 2000s, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera. Okay. But what about men?
Yeah.
Please don't.
There was a time, though, Rob, in the 80s that there really was a movement to sexualize men's stomachs.
Rob,
and I feel like now it's time to bring that back.
Before you jump in, let me clarify something with Justin here. Mesh half shirts or just half shirts?
That might be a little premature on the mesh.
You know, I think I'm going to start a new tradition. Instead of New Year's, you know, and watching, I don't know, what are the name of it? Kathy and Jimmy, whatever they are, it's, those guys.
Yeah, yes, Kathy and Jimmy do the...
I don't know. Does anybody know their names?
The New Year's Eve celebration, Rockin' Eve. Kathy and Jimmy down on State Street.
Yeah.
You don't ever see Kathy and Jimmy? They're a great pair.
Kathy and Jimmy, yes. They count it down. I love Kathy and Jimmy. But I think this year, what I'm going to do is, if you like an hour, 2 hours before New Year's, right? I'm going to start, I'm a Star Wars fan, of course. I'm going to start Star Wars so that at midnight, the Death Star blows up. I think that's the way to go.
So you started at, what, 2 hours up?
Yeah, 2 hours up.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think it's two and some change. I'll have to look it up. You guys do the math. You're all interested in this right now, right?
In 2017, I'm going to start a new exercise trend. It's called ankle twists.
Mm.
And you just twist your ankle.
Oh.
So there's pain, and there might be some bruising, but it's exercise.
I think this year, instead of waiting to Thanksgiving to talk to my angry uncle about politics, just calling him every week. Just going to call every week. How's it going?
There you go. In 2017, I'm going to go to more outdoor sporting events.
Mm.
And I'm going to taunt athletes with 1930s-like barbs. Nothing R-rated, just your basic ribbing. You know, and I've talked about it on the show before. I want to get back to the more, you're a bum!
Yeah.
Hunter Pence, you're a bum!
What's the game they used to play with, like the barrel staves or whatever, like barrel like hoops or whatever? What was that, like stick? Stick? Yeah,
sure. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Why don't you go play some stick hoop or whatever that was?
Look at you! You're leading off first base like you're stuck in peanut butter! Right? Something like that?
Yeah. Exactly.
Get the piano off your back.
Get the piano off your back.
I think I want to burn more people in 2017. That was a big, like, grade school thing.
Like actual,
burn.
Like like a sick burn.
Yeah, sick burn.
Hashtag sick burn.
Hashtag, oh, there you go. Well, hashtag burn, is sick burn is our first hashtag
so
in 2017.
Is that going to replace you just got served?
Yes.
You yeah, got please. Served?
Are you still using that one?
Please.
Oh, is that passe?
That's a, that, I mean, I think you got served as 2004.
Be careful. Yeah. I follow Rob on Twitter. He uses that a lot. A lot.
Shh. Asked you not to tell.
Traffic, you got served.
All right. So there you go. That's what we're going to do in 2017. That's
I'm excited.
Fun there. All right. Coming up after the news, we're going to hear from Chris Jones, the chief Chicago theater critic for the Tribune. We'll talk about the year in theater 2016. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me now, straight from the theater, Mr. Chris Jones, the chief theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. Always a pleasure. And I will say a pleasure to have you be the last segment.
What an honor to be the last segment of the download of 2016.
I love it. You're a big part of the show, and we appreciate the conversation.
It's going to be right now. You're going to want to stay in your car, even though it's cold. You're going to. No, I don't want to miss the end of the download.
Just
I don't want to go inside.
Tap on that brake. Just slide through the intersection.
It's a little slick.
Yeah, it's a little slick. All right, Phantom of the Opera. That's what you're coming from.
Yeah,
right? It's a big show tonight.
Big show. Always a big show. I've been watching that for it feels like pretty much my entire adult life. I've just decided. My entire life. Flashed before me tonight watching that show.
I ask, and I always try to play it a sort of layman here, but I'm like, is there an audience for the Phantom of the Opera?
There's a big audience.
Don't you want newer stuff? I mean, why do they always go back to the greatest hits?
Why do
like
you
this?
Think people want newer stuff? Where exactly did you get that? I feel like everybody's seen that show, right?
I mean, I feel like went on high school trips for that show.
I think it's that, you know, as they say in Hollywood, pre-awareness, that people don't like something they don't know if it's any good. That they go, oh, yeah, Phantom of the Opera, yeah, that's good. Okay. I saw that last time. So this is not the original Broadway production, but a new production, newish. It's the same Phantom of the Opera. There is a particularly good Phantom this time, and there's a good Christine, and it's Phantom of the Opera. The theater has moved on from the show, Justin. It has. It's moved on.
Really?
I don't know about the audience, but the theater has moved on.
I mean, better shows or just better...
It's just a different moment, and there's some things in the show now you go, wow, that's very 1993, you know. But he doesn't care, Mr. Lloyd Webber. He's made a great deal of money.
Right.
And, you know, and he wouldn't have done that if he'd not delivered a quality show for the people, and the people are still coming.
Yeah, well, there you go. I saw you. We went to the Nutcracker last week. Let's talk about that as well. A tremendous, tremendous production done at the auditorium by the Joffrey Ballet.
I like that a lot.
A reconception, really, of the Nutcracker.
Totally. And, I always like local art. I think there's something about a show that's about Chicago, and that's set in the World's Fair, and it's got these amazing designs that are sort of very expressionistic sort of designs, and it starts out in a little wooden shack, probably like the one you live in yourself, and there you sort of see this young girl have these dreams, and she ends up at the World's Fair, perhaps Chicago's most shining moment. When that's the location for all of the fantasy sequences in the show. I saw you there.
Yeah, that was I really liked the way they did that because, you know, very similar to the Nutcracker in the way it's all fantasy and all the sort of different countries that they travel to. But this was great that they put it in the World's Fair in that context because it just felt very Chicago.
Yeah, and so you're dreaming essentially of your own city. And it's a time when this city, you know, with all of its problems, it's still the sort of the locus of many of our dreams.
I love the show. I also love being there on an opening night. I don't think I've ever done that. Where in my years of covering arts and culture, I've never been to an opening night like that.
You cleaned up pretty well.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you. Yeah, I found out later though when I got home. You love this. I had a nice sweater on and a tie that's not unlike. And I got home and I took the sweater off and I realized there was a big hole in the elbow. And I'm like, what am I doing?
You know, I saw that coming down there. Coming down the aisle. I'm thinking, you know, look at him. It's the opening night.
He's trying, but it's not happening.
It's not happening for him.
Well, I mean, it was a who's who. I mean,
it was a who's who.
Yeah, the Joffrey Ballet opening night. I mean, everyone from the mayor down to Donald
was
there.
It was right behind me, and in my left ear, he's going, "It's a great show. It's a great show, Chris. It's a great show. It's a great show." And there's always that moment of like, "Don't you forget who said it's a great show?" As you're writing that review. Don't you forget that there is always the Chicago shakedown
the
for reviews.
The mayor,
oh. And I never know whether to be appalled or to totally love it. I'm like, where else are you getting shaken down for a great review of the ballet? Where else? What else? You name the other town where that happens.
Good. That's so good. you know, as we sort of break down this segment, we want to also look back in 2016. There's the two shows that are out now, but yeah. You know, when you think about shows at that level, shows that are downtown, they're playing Broadway. We've seen a lot of sort of touring stuff come through this year, but the big one was the Goodman Theater's War Paint, which looks to have a big Broadway run
going to the Broadway. Yeah, in the spring with Patti LuPone, Christine Ebersole. They got a bit of work to do on that one, I think. But I think it's going. There was also SpongeBob SquarePants that's not gone yet. They haven't got a theater yet, but I think they will eventually.
Will those
one.
Be the two that we will see in 2017 that had some sort of Chicago
yes,
history to them?
That's correct. Those are the two that will go from here to Broadway next year. I mean, I think there's a couple of other interesting plays too. There's a cool show at the moment at the Steppenwolf Theater called The Christians with Tom Irwin. Who I always remember from. Do you remember My So-Called Life? Did you ever watch that?
Yeah.
Great show. He was great. And Tom Irwin is an excellent actor. And you forget sometimes, because these guys have been in that ensemble a long time, there can be big gaps between when they appear. And I was watching that show thinking, this is an excellent actor. And it's about a church. It's set in a church. And it's kind of funny because the opening of the show is like you're in a church. And it's a Steppenwolf audience. I'm like, what is this? This is totally ironic. No one's buying it. They've got a choir. They've got a cross. Everyone's going, This is all gonna destroy. Right. Yeah. Any minute now, you know, Amy Morton, they're gonna come down the aisle and kill us all. but it's actually a pretty interesting show about faith, and it's about a kind of a pastor who has a sort of a midlife crisis, and then there's this great debate in it about what heaven is. And how the idea that, let's say, if you're, you know, if you're married to a non-believer or your mom is a non-believer, then why do you want to be in heaven if your mom is in hell or if your wife is in hell? Why would you want? Wouldn't that actually make it into a different kind of hell? So it's an interesting play, very, very interesting play. And I think that if you really hate the holidays and you just want to be depressed, that's your show. And that's always been Steppenwolf's role at this time.
Yeah, of course. Chris Jones, the chief theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. Let's take a quick break, and then let's come back and talk about the sort of trends and threads of 2016.
You got it.
It's been a high drama off the stage in Chicago theater 2016. We'll talk more with Chris Jones coming up. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Chris Jones, chief theater critic, Chicago Tribune, in studio. Talking about 2016, the year in theater. You know, we do this segment every year, and I feel like we do it and we just list the best plays. This year, more than ever, we've seen a lot of drama off stage. The Reader had a big profile of Profiles Theater.
Yes.
And all some scary stuff about abuse and some strange things at that theater. Too Much Light Makes a Baby Go Blind. The License Taken Away from the Neo-Futurist. Coming out of that, we got a bunch of stories about bad behavior.
Yes.
Second City, another storyline where they made some changes. Cast members left. You never see that happen. Quit because of, abusive work environment. We talked about it on the show.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of this stuff. I mean, you're surprised to see this in the theater community. It kind of comes off the heels of a year before where there seemed to be more movement for human resources and things like that at big theaters.
I think it's been a very striking year that way. And I think, you know, whether it's a coincidence of you've had a number of these issues that have come up at the same time, or whether it's an indication of, you know, people restless for change, certainly within the theater community itself, there's been a shift from, you know, I think the Chicago theater community has always consisted of distinct populations. There's a population of people in it who just want to sort of quietly do their work and maybe get ahead and maybe move to New York. And like any other business, that requires being nice to people in power and sort of, you know, not making any waves and just, you know, focusing on your own work. And there's still those guys in the community. But there's also a large group of people now who really want to change the community. And I think a lot of those guys have been very instrumental in what's been going on. It's been a difficult year, I think, in some ways, because what happens, of course, is that, you know, when you get a lot of internal roiling going on, which is what's been going on this year, it's easy to sort of forget the audience, you know. And I think that's sort of what's happened with Hypocrites, for example, which, you know, just today announced that it was canceling the rest of its season, which
yeah,
I almost...
Yeah, that's a big story.
It's a big story. I mean, they've been around for 20 years. And
they do some great work. Yeah.
They put out a press release saying there's no audience. And I was like, no audience? There used to be a huge audience. I don't know what happened to the Hypocrites audience. And I, so I found that really disturbing because I actually thought that company over the years.
What I mean, they talk about financial problems. Yeah. I mean, does it come down to the fact that, I mean, to be able to put theater on in places where the Hypocrites put theaters on?
Yeah.
I mean, is it, the rent's really expensive? Did they raise the ticket price? Do you see this more casual audience going, I don't want to spend that kind of money to go see a theater show?
Well, people like to go to Phantom of the Opera. You know, that's the sort of the audience for theater is often not the audience that the people doing theater wish it was. It's not the same profile that they really want to play to, which I think in part is what's gone on at Second City, too. The audience is persistently wanting what it wants, and the artists are increasingly saying that's not what we want to do.
That's interesting.
So then you have an issue of like, well, what's the right power structure? Should the artists be able to do what they want to do? And ultimately, and I think a lot of people would argue yes, and the audience just has to either not come or it has to find its right place to go. Or are the artists in any way obligated to actually please the people who are sitting there in the seats?
I mean, that's not
a new argument.
That's not a new argument when it comes to any other art form.
Right.
You say that in music all the time. If you're a band, if you want to play a certain kind of music, you can get in the top 40.
That's right. Right? That's right.
But, you know, Second City is such an interesting... because they've had both internal strife when it comes to the management shakeup, but they've also had theater performers on stage, not like the tenor in which the audience is approaching them.
Yes.
So much so in the new review, they have a sign that you talk about in your piece, which really garnered a lot of criticism about the idea of this sort of...
Criticism of the sign and of me for not liking the sign.
Yeah,
That's right. The sign is sort of telling the audience how it should behave and what it should and shouldn't say. And I think the argument that a lot of people who were very angry with me said was essentially why are you condoning any kind of, you know, prejudiced speech, and so that was that argument. And I'm sort of saying, yeah, but you know, it's Second City and it's supposed to be a conversation with both sides of the aisle, right? It's supposed to be a place where, you know, a Trump voter can walk in and maybe feel okay for a while and maybe have their mind changed about one or two things. And I think if you start sort of saying, you know, it's not a comfortable place, then you're changing what Second City was. And I think a lot of people would say, shut up, Chris Jones. That's what we're going to do. And you're invested in the old white Second City. It's always been, you know, it's not been right for a long time. This is a new direction and you need to get with the program or shut up or retire or whatever. I think that was expressed to me today.
today? I thought but, at least more than that.
It's the old thing.
Yeah,
it's the old thing that always gets me. I don't know why. I've got to get past that. But I'm arguing, I guess, that there aren't many places left in our world where people with different points of view are going to be in the same room. And Second City's always been that. You've got a drunk convention here from Iowa standing next to Justin Kaufman, sitting next to them. And that, for me, has always been a place where interesting things happen and where... But, you know, it seems to some degree the theater reflects the rest of the country, right? And there's not a good conversation right now. There's not a lot of this country does not want to talk to the rest of it for whatever reason.
Right. And there's some of the argument to a Second City show that would be more politically active for one side or the other is because they're expressing their artistic rage.
That's right. That's the argument. The argument is if that's what their point of view is, then that's their point of view and they shouldn't have to apologize for it for a bunch of, you know, racist drunk people in the audience. That's one side of the argument. The other side of the argument says that satire, you know, should always have multiple points of view. So it should always reflect ideally the dominant point of view of the performers. They should be able to poke fun at themselves. That's it. And say no. And that's not where this show currently is at. Now, and nor does it want to be. And I think most of the people would reject my saying that they should be. And there you have it. And so that's it's just a decision that Second City, which after all is a private commercial enterprise.
Yeah.
So it's got to decide what it wants to be. And that's as simple as that.
Where do you see, I mean, as we wrap up here, where do you see? I mean, do you see these same sort of prevailing threads and trends where you said like this sort of a certain... sector of the Chicago theater community is going to keep pushing for this and see changes in 2017? Are you going to see some of that's what's happening behind the scenes actually trickle into art that's being done on the stage?
Well, I think there's got to be a multiplicity of points of view. I mean, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm not apologizing for that multiplicity of points of view. I'm just, that's my point of view, that you've got to have a variety of opinions, and you've also got to have a variety of audiences. And you've got to, at times, you've got to say to yourself, what does the audience want? Because at the end of the day, you know, theater is dependent on its audience. And if the audience goes away, a la Hypocrites, then there's not a lot, you know, you're just doing it for yourself. And you're not, if your aims are political, if there's no one there to listen to you, you're not achieving any political aims. It's as simple as that. And that's a hard, somehow a hard thing to get across these days.
What do you think in 2017, when we look ahead, what are you looking forward to? I mean, last year at this time, we were talking about shows like War Paint or even SpongeBob. Are there things in 2017 we should be looking at?
You know, apropos of your earlier point, I just think the theater in the city now has to focus on the people going to see it. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of great work done diversifying what's on stage and a lot less work done diversifying who's in the audience. And I think that would be my number one thing that I think the theater needs to think about, because there has to be an audience for everything. So before you do anything in the theater, you've got to say, okay, now what's the audience? And it's hard, but it's got to be done.
Great to see you, man. Thanks for coming in.
It's the end of the year.
The end of the year.
Are you just chilling for the rest of the year?
Yeah, man? I know. I there's a lot of Blackhawks games coming up here in the next couple weeks, and then we'll be back after the new year.
Oh.
It's going to be good. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
Thanks for coming in. Chris Jones, Chief Theater Critic for the Chicago Tribune, joins us here to talk theater. Thank you so much for coming in, man.
Thanks a lot, man.
Well, that's going to do it for the download. Hannah Stanley in the building.
It's so nice I get to see you 2 days in a row.
I know, right? How was the show last night?
Moderate.
That was good.
Iffy.
Do you find yourself having to adjust to a new sleep schedule when you get two sort of shows like this overnight?
You know, honestly, almost always, it's absolutely fine. I get up, I get the kids to school, and then I sleep. And today was holiday parties at the school and grabbing teacher gifts and doing some editing that had to get done, had to. And so, yeah, this evening I was like power sleeping before I came in. And now I'm all right.
Power sleeping.
I had to. But yeah, I mean, I get Patty doesn't sleep.
Yeah, she's a machine.
She is. I think she's the little girl from Small Wonder grown up. I think that's who Patty is. That's not confirmed. I don't want to start rumors. But I think she's a robot.
She was great today in the.
She always is in the play.
She was Mrs. Cratchit. Mr. Cratchit and Mrs. Cratchit.
Yeah, she. I mean, that was something I had to miss out on because of the kids.
The kids
and the holiday parties, the winter parties. But yeah, no, it was you guys always a great job.
Yeah,
I always liked the play. It was
what do you got tonight?
Dude, Uncle Tommy Skilling joining me to talk.
What?
About that's how I roll. That is how I roll.
Nice
I get him
work.
On. He is going to talk us all off the ledge, I hope. me off the ledge. And actually we have a ledge because I could jump into the river and that would end many
would
of my troubles.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, he's going to be on. We're going to actually talk about fake news.
Oh, with Tom Skilling?
Yes. Because this weather is just all a
it's
lie.
All fake. It's all a lie.
It's all a lie.
It's in your head. That's great.
No, we have an expert on. I mean, like, I could, if I read his full resume, it would just be the entire interview.
Oh, that's great.
He's a tremendous journalist. Yeah, so we're going to talk fake news and how it affects us all.
All right. Have yourself a
merry
great,
little
merry
show.
Little show
that
and weekend.
Great.
And for everyone, I will be back on January 3rd, 2017, and we will continue with shows here on The Download.